That was Lynn DeMartini.
Hey, Lynn DeMartini. Good job. You were entertaining people before I arrived. There you go. It's good to know that we can actually play videos on here. They say you can, but I never tried it. Well, I guess I maybe have tried it. Anyway, so welcome everybody to our NEPT case study call for the month of December. For those of you who are new, the case study calls are those where we devote time to actually going in depth with some of the cases. And we usually can do two, maybe three cases on a call because we do go in so much depth. And this is the one place where you can submit a bunch of labs. You have to fill out a form that describes to me what's going on and what help you want. And when you're relatively new, I will, hold your hand as we go through them, and I'll mostly go through them and give you tidbits of information here and there. And as you get more and more entrenched in the program, I'm going to have you present these, and eventually you're going to present cases, and that will be part of your certification process, is to be on the call like this and actually present your own case. But you will have watched me presenting cases a number of times before you get to have to do that. Unless you want to just jump right in, if you're one of these people who is like, yes, let me do it, I'm up for a challenge, we'll actually probably have Lynn do one first. And her eyes opened up like saucers. Yes. All right. So tonight we had two different cases submitted. One was Mahala and one was Brandon. Brandon's is a little bit shorter, and I don't know who's came in first. I think Brandon's actually came in first. Yeah. So you usually do them in the order that they came in. So there's two, and we will have time to do the two tonight. Sometimes we can squeak in three, but we've had these calls go as long as 2.5-3 hours, and I don't think most of you want to stay on 2.5-3 hours most of the time, although we've had those calls where it's so enticing that people are, still, almost everybody's still there at the 2.5-3 hour mark. These are all recorded, so you can always go back and find it. So if you do have to leave early and you want to see, how the story ended and how the thing turned out, write down somewhere, put it in your phone or write it down on a piece of paper, a sticky note, approximately when you left. That way, when you go back to the recording, if you don't have time to listen to the whole thing, you can start where you left off. All right. So I'm going to start with Brandon. And the way I do this is I share my screen and I'll show what he submitted and his labs. He submitted one case study form and one lab, and it is his, and he gave me permission to say that in the thing that he signed at the top. I don't see anything that says no, I don't give permission, so that's great. So we're going to open up Brandon, and I think this is going to be an interesting case, and I want to hear a lot from Brandon on what he did. You know, he mentioned his particular situation on the Shine Facebook group, and there was a lot of interest in hearing how he's dealt with his situation with Crohn's disease. So Brandon, let's unmute you. Are you there?
I am here. Hello.
Hi. Can we see you, or can we just hear you?
Well, how do I make video possible here?
At the bottom of your screen, there should be a black bar, and on that bar, it sometimes goes away when you're not hovering over it, but if you hover your mouse close to the bottom of the screen,
there you can
start video. There he is. Hey, good to see you.
Hello.
Good. All right. So this is you, I'm assuming. It sounded like what we discussed when we were at Shine. And what I'd like to do, I've read through the whole thing. I'd love for you to give a synopsis of this. You did a great job, by the way, in here. And I don't mind if you have it in front of you and you're reading it, but you gave a lot of good detail, even down to the not breastfed and, some of those really early on things that are super important, especially when you're dealing with gut issues, right? Breastfed versus not, on antibiotics in early years or not. All that stuff is super important. So, go ahead and tell us. Let me share the screen so people can see it. All right. Can everybody see my screen? Yes? Can you see it?
Yes, I can see it.
Okay, now I'm not seeing you anymore. Oh, there you are. Okay, good. All right, so just tell us a little bit about it. And the way I like to present cases is, XYZ, 23-year-old, male, presents with, you know, and you're a little older than that, but not much. So, you know, just presents with and tell your story. So I know that you told the story from the standpoint of where you started. I know you've done a lot to support your healing, and I really want to emphasize a lot of that stuff. And I also want to look at your labs, which he submitted. He just submitted these. We'll talk a little bit about how you can better see what's going on with your labs in terms of using some of the tools we've given you. And doing a quick look before we even do anything, I just want to just quickly show you this. What shows up immediately that is like, whoa. He's got something that's very common. It's a very common situation as a sequela to Crohn's. Anybody? Want to shout out the answer? Give you a hint. It's already marked on here at the lows and the highs. And some of you are new who haven't been through the blood chemistry module yet or been to a lot of case studies may not recognize this off the top, but some of the rest of you should. This is your... Okay, there's another. So what are we seeing? Just as a first glance, because I know I want to teach you how to go through these in detail, but there's also that first glance look and you go, okay, there's something going on here. Anybody want to say?
Is it low iron?
Low iron, yeah. So there's definitely signs of anemia here, right? And with Crohn's, there's a lot of blood loss from the bottom, right? The intestinal tract is ulcerated and there's usually some blood loss. And even if he's not overtly seeing the blood loss, there's definitely signs. So there's definitely some anemia signs here. There was also low vitamin D, but we'll get back to that. So tell us a little bit about your story, Brandon.
Okay, so I started noticing symptoms like in my teenage years, but you know, when you wake up every morning, you know, it starts becoming like your normal. So, like, it didn't hit me hard until age 23. Until
so, tell us what those symptoms were. So, what were the early symptoms you started to have?
Okay, so I have like anorectal abscesses, which is just like bad infection of just like pus coming out like your anus and like just smell horribly bad. And just like a lot of diarrhea or just like not even going to the bathroom at all.
So alternating constipation and diarrhea.
Yeah. And then like those symptoms led up to like just like the doubled over gut-wrenching pain. You know, it'd come on in the afternoon. I would feel it like for the rest of the night. And had like a lot of vomiting too. And like accompanied by like no food or anything, I would just drink water and then I'd vomit for 10, 12 hours straight, like every 15 minutes or so. And so like that was like a bowel obstruction, you know, I know now, but I had no idea, you know, I hadn't eaten food for, you know, several days at a time and here I am vomiting. I'm like, what's going on? Is it something I ate? But I didn't even eat anything. Mm-hmm. So I had like lots of just months and months of that, you know, where it would like, just vomit, just water for, you know, maybe like once a week or something. I guess it depended on like what I ate, how inflamed I was. And just a lot of burping up just like the most horrible taste you can possibly imagine. Just a lot of diarrhea in general.
So you were a teenager when you first started noticing this. Did you discuss this with your parents?
You know, I did not. You know, it felt like such an embarrassing thing and you almost feel like you're inconveniencing them, you know, by saying like, hey, I got this problem, you know, and they're just like, oh, I don't know what to do, you know. So yeah. I never said anything.
Wow. You just lived with it.
Yeah. So okay. Horrible.
All right. So come around, you said around 22 is when it hit its peak and you sought some help, right?
Yeah, honestly, I was passed out from like such horrible pain in my bedroom and my dad came in and he carried me to the emergency room. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of weird to look back because like at no point where I was like vomiting or in pain, you know, obviously my parents were aware of this, but like never did they mention like, hey, let's go to the doctor or let's check
this
out.
So they were aware that you were vomiting and had diarrhea?
Yeah. They were aware of like me vomiting just because like couldn't hide that, you know, all day, you know, I'd stay home and like, yeah. Mm-hmm. So they were aware of that.
So they were aware that something was going on, but they had never really suggested it going to the doctor.
Right, right. You know, I did go to the doctor one time, and I waited for this person for 6 hours, and they finally came in, did a long questionnaire. I told all my symptoms, and what he wanted to do was remove my gallbladder within like the next like coming week. He said it was like gallbladder issues, and I never saw him again, needless to say.
Mm. So you were at that point, you know, I know a lot of teenagers are just, you know, you're entrenched in a Western medical philosophy. So at that point you were not like, okay, that's what the doctor says, let's do it. So what do you think was behind that? I'm just curious.
I mean, it's hard to say. Like I would never like taking like even ibuprofen or anything. So I was like always like kind of weary, and it was weird for me to even be in a doctor's office. Like there's some kind of fear behind it. I'm like, I'm young, I'm supposed to be healthy, right?
Right.
Right. So yeah, whole gallbladder removing, like,
didn't sound right to you.
Me. It was like from, you know, fatty fried foods and, you know, all these things I really didn't eat, you know, anyway. So it didn't make really any sense to me.
Right. Yeah. Well, did you grow up in a family where they were more health conscious, or where did you grow up in more of a standard diet?
So, I mean, my friends always said I was on like the birdseed diet, which like, it was just like, it wasn't like fried fatty foods. It wasn't like a lot of meat necessarily, but like a lot of grains, pastas, and honestly, like as a family, we didn't really eat together very frequently. So I was left, you know, on my own. So like, yeah, I would get like fast food and eat a lot of cereal. I had a cereal diet.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. Okay. So, so you first then in your 20s, you revisited this situation, right? So the vomiting, your parents brought you in once. Then in your 20s, you passed out, you were brought to the ER. Was that where, let me just make sure I got this story straight. Was that where the doctor wanted to take you, take your gallbladder?
No, it was about 6 months or so prior to that.
Okay.
Then when I went to the ER, and then I started going through a lot of testing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then what?
So I went into the ER. They took, you know, a urine sample. It was tested positive for E. coli. And they gave me a CT scan and, you know, gave me no definite results till I was there 6 or 7 days later. And they finally did a colonoscopy. And did some biopsies and said it was for sure Crohn's disease, which I had never heard of at that point, especially being like a young person. Like I said, like I'm not supposed to have health problems or something.
Right.
But I had a lot of testing up to that. I had intestinal x-rays. I had, you know, where you're drinking the barium and everything.
Right.
I had an ultrasound. I had a cystoscopy. An endoscopy, and then finally a colonoscopy, and I don't remember what other tests they did. It was a lot.
It was a lot. And then the one thing they did find was that they didn't find ulcers or any other areas of your intestinal tract messed up.
Yeah, they didn't necessarily say they found ulcers or give me pictures. It was just like a lot of infection, inflammation.
Yeah. Well, clearly with the fissures, that was an infection. That was That was probably an easy diagnosis. You just have to visually look. You know, a doctor in an inspection would see that, right? And you could feel it and you could smell it and, you know, you knew it was there. Okay. So some of the other things that stood out for me that, you know, in terms of early childhood, because sometimes, you know, when you have somebody who has some of these things happening so young, and even older, you want to really look backwards into some of the root causes, like what happened to create, you know, imbalanced flora, what happened to create this immune system issue, what happened early on. And from what I gather, you said you weren't breastfed. Your mom was given an epidural during birth. You were hospitalized for 3 days at age 3 for fire ant bites. My guess is that you were then put on, given antibiotics. You said you sustained a fever 105 degrees after being given antibiotics or before they gave you the antibiotics?
I believe it was after the antibiotics.
So early on, there was exposure to antibiotics and there was a pathogenic assault. So let's just say. But then again, at age 11 for 2 days, hospitalized for an unknown viral infection. So clearly the immune system's been problematic since birth, probably. And then the fissure showed up at age 17, IBS symptoms, which is the range of time we just went through at age 21 with the vomiting, suggested the gallbladder removed, didn't do that, but received another two doses of antibiotics for UTI and it never went away. So that's an interesting piece, right? So antibiotics over and over and over again, recurrent infections in all different parts of the body, like no one spot seemed to be the primary area, the urinary tract, the fissures, the fire ant bites, wherever those were, the viral infection, oftentimes that's respiratory, but who knows where that was, but over and over again, and the antibiotics. So I'm assuming that no one ever mentioned replenishing your gut flora, microbiome, anything like that along the course of all these antibiotics. Okay. Okay. And then in the emergency room, then finally Crohn's disease, March of 2012. So that's about five and a half years ago. Okay. So at that point you were 22. So now you're what, 27? Is that 28. Okay. Okay. Alwyn, then corticosteroids and immunosuppressants, which is a common approach to a Crohn's disease or any kind of inflammatory bowel disease. So if anybody who hasn't been through the entirety of the digestive mastery program, the clinical mastery of digestion, CMDS, we do have a whole module on inflammatory bowel disease, what that means and what some of the underlying causes are and what some of the things you can do to help people when they're in that situation. But common, very common is corticosteroids and immunosuppressants. Oh, wow. And then 5 months later, removed your terminal ileum, cecum, and appendix. Okay, so here we went from they wanted to take your gallbladder and now they wanted to take this. What was it that made you say, okay, take it at that point?
You know, it was a fistula from my intestines to my bladder. So I was passing fecal matter, you know, out through my urine and like even undigested food and even air. So,
right.
For sure thing. I was like,
that wasn't for sure thing. That wasn't like, maybe it's your gallbladder, take it out. This was clear.
Yeah, this right. was clear at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. And a fistula a fistula is like a tube that goes from one part to another. And there's often infection that gets passed through. But in this particular case, when that goes from the intestine into another organ, that's a serious situation where this, you know, something needs to be done immediately. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, all right. So then tell us more about what did you do after? It sounds like you then did some research on your own and took control. So tell us what happened after you had this surgery.
So it was like a slow transition. You know, I started looking on the internet and like, honestly, I didn't find like a lot of cases that were like, you know, similar to mine. You know, I had the surgery and then now they're doing some kind of nutritional therapy or something. You know, I just found like some general, like, okay, this is what I can do to now improve my health, you know, slow steps at a time.
Right.
And it's like funny now, but like, I feel like one of the internet resources I looked at was Mind Body Green, I mm-hmm. think, which it's a good starting place, definitely. But like, mm-hmm. I look back, there's a lot of misinformation, but like, you know, it was mind-blowing information to me at the time, and so I started, like, stepping into it, and, like, one of the first thing I did was, you know, eliminate grains, you know, which was, like, a large part of my diet,
mm-hmm.
and started letting, you know, stop drinking, like, a lot of dairy, and, like, you
mm-hmm.
know, cheese, and, like, just a lot of, like, heavy foods, and, you know, started trying to make, like, blended smoothies and that sort of thing, but, like, that I kind of fumbled with at first, you know, I was putting like raw beets in there and just like mm-hmm. zucchini and like my digestion was just not ready for
not
that.
Ready for that, right.
Sick off of that, you know, and just not doing it right, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So tell me, so I just want to point out that when you start to talk to people, you have friends, you have family members who have kids, who have teenagers, who have these recurrent infections. Imagine what would have happened if he would have removed, you know, grains and dairy and some of the things that were damaging, that were hurting him early on. This may have saved him the fate of having to have surgery. So it's really important that when you hear your clients talk about it, even if they are not, they're talking to you and they're about their health, but they just happen to mention that they have the teenager who's got this or the, you know, the brother who has that, that there's so much intervention that can be done before this. I mean, he got to the point where there was a hole in his intestine and it created a tube and in going into the bladder. I mean, that's pretty serious. And that means that had been going on for a very long time. That just doesn't happen overnight. So it really we've got to take these symptoms seriously and help people to remove those underlying causes as soon as we can. All right, so fast forward to now, where are you at symptom-wise? How far along have you gotten? You mentioned that you sometimes get bloated when you eat only two meals, or you get constipated when you only eat two meals. So how can we help you? I mean, what do you want to share, first of all, about what's worked and what hasn't worked for you? And then so that can help us, you know, and everybody on the call tonight and also in the program to really see, you know, something at work in practicality. And then where are you at right now? Where do you feel like you need some direction or support?
Okay, so like a little over two years ago, I started like a whole foods, plant-based diet. And kind of like took like the wrong approach, or just like it was hard because you know, I was getting almost like good results with it at first. It was like an extremely high fat diet. You know, it consists of like an avocado banana smoothie with like, you know, some greens powders and that sort of thing, and then like, you know, snack on fruit throughout the day, and then like by like a night meal I would be eating like a lot of oils and like vegetables. And like, it gave me like, I guess like.
Oops, he froze.
Good, a lot of fermentation, you know, and, you know, rancid fats, that sort of thing. So like, I was having good bowel movements, but like, just was not good. And like, you know, after a year of that, like I lost, like over 40 pounds. Oh. So like I was wasting away. So it was like, okay, I have like energy or something, but like not really, you know. And at the time I was doing some traveling too, a lot of hiking, you know, going up mountains and that sort of thing. And like I lost a lot of muscle mass, and like then I started having like kidney pains, and I was like, this is not working, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's where I started adopting like a more like fruit-based diet, and that was very easy on digestion, but like not at first. It was very hard to make like that flip going from like high fat to now like high carb and like a lot of water content. And like this is when I started noticing like symptoms of like leaky gut. Like I know it was there like underlying the whole time, but like now I started feeling like some serious burning around like the site of surgery. And like I started out, I think it was just from like cleaning out, because like,
oops,
the point where my kidneys were burning, I did a water fast for 6 days, you know, and like weird stuff just started like coming out of me, and like then I started eating fruit, and then that's when I started noticing like just burning, like leaky gut, you know, just symptoms. It was just high frequency pain, you know. It wasn't like doubled over in pain, but it was just like, ooh, this is not good. And so I did like, you know, I kept eating fruit, you know. I'm almost stubborn, you know. It wasn't working, but like it was
supposed to work. So kiss me, right? That's what we thought. But it's supposed to be good for me. Let me just keep doing it, even though my body's saying no.
Yeah, I'm so stubborn, you know. It's like, even if it's like wrong, you know, I'm in my mind, I'm like, this has to work. So I continued with the fruit, and I started digesting a lot better. But like the leaky gut, I started feeling that, like symptoms of that a lot. And so I started doing a lot more water fasting at that point. And where I'm at now is, I mean, I have barely any symptoms. I would say none at all, like of leaky gut. But yeah, if I do eat like two meals a day, I feel like stuff just like comes to a halt in me.
Mm-hmm. And when you do two meals a day, are they packed meals? Are they heavy meals to sustain you?
They are large meals. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like you need a little bit more, more frequency of movement in your track. Otherwise it's almost like it gets paralyzed.
Right, right, right. And stuff seems to get like broken up too. You know, it's not like a full send, you know, it's like I'll pass out part of my meal and then there would be like these fragments almost. I feel like that's almost because of like, you know, there's nothing separating my colon, anything.
Yeah, because the valve, they did take the ileocecal valve, it sounds like. So the cecum and the cecum and the ileum. So it's the end of the small intestine, the beginning of the large intestine, and then the valve in between. So there's basically no door that locks up. It waits till there's enough to pass through and then passes through. The other issues you run into there, and I don't know if anybody talked to you about this, but I see methyl B12. But yeah, the B12 is super important because the B12 is absorbed in the distal ileum. And he doesn't have it there. So he definitely needs to be taking a sublingual or a patch, you know, a skin, a topical or a liposomal that would get absorbed in the duodenum. So those are important things to think about when you hear about people having parts of their colon removed, is looking back to see, okay, what happens in that part of the colon? What are the functions there? What other nutrients? And I don't, off the top of my head, there's a couple of minerals. I think biotin might be, there's a bunch of things that you would want to look up and see which nutrients, and you can find all of that information in the micronutrient module, and we say which part of the digestive tract are these absorbed. So it's really helpful to go, okay, what other nutrients do we need to be careful about in somebody who's had this issue? So, okay. So how long have you been taking the B12 for?
Oh, geez.
Long time?
I mean, not a long time. I mean, like a little over 2 years, maybe.
Okay. Okay. So not from the beginning when you had the surgery, but for a couple of years now. Okay. And then it looks like you're also taking vitamin D. Twice you're taking 400 IUs, but if we look at your lab test, and I didn't actually check the date on this. What is the date on this?
This was actually March.
Yeah.
I feel incredibly different, you know.
You do. Okay.
Than in March.
Well, good, because it'd be good to go back and see. So let me just look at the vitamin D was here a little while ago. There it is. You're at 43, and it would be really helpful to get that up to like 75 or so. So if you were taking, here's how I look at vitamin D's. If you're ever looking at somebody's labs, you see a vitamin D, you look at it low, you go, how much vitamin D were you taking for the 6 months, 3 months even, 3 months prior to taking this test? And if you said, yeah, I was taking the 4,000 twice a day, then I would say that's not enough. And what you need to do is bump it up. But if you said to me, oh, I was taking 4,000 once a day, I saw this number and I bumped it up, then great. What you really need to do is get it taken again. So which is it? Were you taking the 4,000 twice a day before this was done?
So at that time, I think I was taking like a tablet form of like 2000 IUs and not consistently.
Okay.
You know? Since then, like I take it daily and you know, I just went through a whole entire summer where I had my shirt off and I was working out in the garden. So I feel like that is
great.
Like a lot higher now.
So it would be, now would be a good time to get another test done. Direct Labs is having their December $59 for the whole shebang test. So it's well worth it. Anybody wants to do that, it's directlabs.com/Dr. Rita Marie. That'll get you access to all my different panels that we have set up there. But $59, what some people do is they go in twice and order it, once for now and once to retest in another 6 months to a year. And they let you do that, obviously. So I would say it's a good idea to do because you have a lot of issues here with the iron. I don't know if you were responded to this and then increase your iron or iron containing food. So tell me about that.
So like I was experiencing this, like, you know, I couldn't even walk down, you know, 1,000 feet without feeling like lightheaded, short of breath.
So you were feeling the anemia here.
Yeah, it would almost get like cloudy too, you know, it'd be hard to breathe. And like now I could run until my legs get tired.
Great.
So at the time, like I wanted to get like high iron. And so I did, I got like a concentrated like vitamin C powder, and I started doing spirulina and chlorella. But that did not seem to like help. Just because it almost exacerbated the gut, you know, just because it was just so powdered and so concentrated. I don't know. It just had a strong reaction. It was very painful. So I kind of had like ease off of that until I like heal. And so I think that's where like a lot of like fasting, water fasting came in and like helped out a lot.
How long of fasts were you doing? Like 3 or 4 days at a time?
Yeah, usually 2 or 3 days. I mean, I've done 5 or 6 day fasts. And I think that was like definitely bomb started my healing because it made sense to me. You know, if I have like permeable guts, you know, like sending food in there, you know, it's like, like putting muddy water on the wound, you know, it's
right. Exactly. And that's one thing people don't realize. And it is a very good approach, either liquid diet or fasting. Fasting tends to be much quicker. Water fasting, not all people are open to it or in a situation where they could do it, especially not being attended. But it, you know, think about anything where you want it to heal, you rest it, you have a broken arm, you put it in a cast, you don't go, you know, painting walls and doing, you know, skydiving with broken bones, right? So, but we don't do that with a broken gut. And a lot of people have broken guts and it really is broken, especially in a situation where it's Crohn's and then there was surgery. There's actual physical damage to it, and resting it with water, with juice, with some people you can get away with vegetable broths and steamed vegetables blended up with liquids. You know, when you're doing a healing for a something as serious as an inflammatory bowel disease, oftentimes raw food is not the answer. Maybe some juice, you know, diluted vegetable juice, but the fiber in there, as much as there's all the extra nutrients and as much as I'm a big advocate of a high raw diet for the most part, in healing from an irritated bowel like that, an inflamed bowel, and after surgery, that's probably not the solution. And that's why some of the stuff you did probably made it worse, but you persisted because you read, right? And we all read and go, oh yeah, raw food's supposed to be the best thing. Let's just do it. Oh, it hurts, but it'll get better. It's just a detox reaction. And those are the kind of things that bring the sanity to the table with people. And say, yeah, raw foods is great. Well, you know, but if you have a gut that's inflamed, it's going to be like sandpaper going over it. So how do you get those nutrients into someone to help heal all that great chlorophyll and all? Well, juicing is a great way to do it. And broths are a great way to do it, right? A lot of those nutrients come out into the water. Yeah, the water solubles do get destroyed, but those are the kind of things that are really helpful. I'm going to throw one other thing into the mix. I don't know if you've tried it or done it, but Boswellia has a ton of studies on it in helping to heal inflamed guts in inflammatory bowel disease. So Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, lots of stuff. And I've actually worked with people where they went from, you know, the bloody stools to no bloody stools in a week or two on being on that stuff. And it's a tincture you can get. It's also called frankincense. Frankincense, boswellia are really the same thing. Some people say the essential oil rubbed over the belly. I'd say do that and take it internally, right? The essential oils can be diluted, can be taken internally as well. You do have to be careful because too much concentrated essential oil can be aggravating to mucous membrane. So I would start with a tincture version of boswellia. In anybody with an inflammatory bowel disease, unless there's some contraindication to it. Have you tried boswellia?
Yeah, I have used frankincense and some essential oil, and I just bought a 1/2 pound of the powder. I've used pure encapsulations, their version of boswellia.
Nice.
But like, I wish I knew that like 2 years ago, you know.
Right. And that's where we come into the picture here. Regardless of where you are in your studies, there's all this common sense stuff that you're picking up here that you can just help support people. Of course, you always want to do the disclaimer and say, you know, check with your doctor. But if your doctor doesn't support nutritional therapy, fire them and find a new one is usually my next step after the disclaimer, because there's so many uneducated doctors out there who are harming people. Even though first do no harm is one of the things they took as their oath. And it's really important to just help people with common sense stuff to start. So you've come a long way. You've done the Boswellia. You've done something. So did you do anything? What did you end up doing for the iron situation?
You know what? I just think it was like an absorption issue. So like once I like healed my guts, I think it's just like, you know, I just noticed it not, you know, being short of breath anymore, okay. You know, so I just feel like, you know, just absorbing the food that I was eating, you know,
yeah.
And like I had to eliminate greens for a while, you know, I juiced them,
yeah.
You know, I've been eating every single day consistently for the last year and a half, which I think has definitely
big
helped
time.
A lot. Big time, yeah, but not eating them and chewing them.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a big problem because nobody chews perfectly, first of all. So you're always going to get those fibers, which are generally good, but not when it's like sandpaper against an open wound. So, I think that, you know what, I always have people do the juicing, the broths, or broth plus with some, if you're trying to move from the real liquid stage into more of a solid, you can go from the broth and the juice into taking some lightly steamed or actually start with well steamed veggies blended in, but very dilute, thinned, and just gradually increase the fiber load to the point where the body is actually tolerating it and benefiting from it. And if you add something in some situation like this and the person gets worse, what do you do? Anybody? What do you do, Brandon, if you give somebody something and they, you know, they're introducing foods and they get worse? What do you do?
You stop.
You stop, right.
You get worse.
You back off. And a lot of times people say, well, I just figured it was just my body getting adjusted, so I kept going. And now I'm 3 weeks out and I'm back to the mess that I was when I started. So as much as, you know, there is a tendency because we're all these impatient human beings to want to accelerate it. And we think the more that we do, the better, right? The more of these great greens and these powders and all these things that we do, the better it's going to be for the body. And sometimes less is more. A lot of times less is more, right? So you've done a good job. I would say at this point, I would love to see you get another blood test. Okay. And then, go in on the site and put it in your master tracker and put it in the blood chem software. Have you gotten to that module yet on blood chemistry? Has that been?
You know what? I think it was just open to me like 3 days ago.
Beautiful. So you'll have access to all the resources in there. Now it's perfect because you're going to get your own labs. You're going to put them in there. You're going to put both in. So put the old one and the new one so you see them side by side. And then you have a record from this point forward for the rest of your life. You can just keep comparing things. You'll have to create new spreadsheets because it won't go out quite, you know,
right.
the 100 years or so that you've got left on you. But you've got this great opportunity to look at that. So go in there, learn how to do that, put this one in, put it in the blood chem software. If you have any trouble with any of that or you're user ID password doesn't work for the site, reach out, you know, Lynn can check it out. Has everybody been given those? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you should have access.
Been given what?
The access to the blood chem software.
They should. They don't. Let me know.
Okay. Have you given them the new list of people as people are coming
yep.
in?
Right after Shine.
Perfect. So you guys should have it. So check that out. It's on the resources tab on the site. And if you haven't been to one of Lynn's amazing orientations, she can take you through it. But once you get into the blood chem software, it becomes more apparent with what's going on there. And we're going to re-record some of the master tracker videos because we've changed and added things. It just keeps getting better and better. So the unfortunate thing about that is I have to keep doing new videos. So we'll be doing that. Okay. So, anything else, you know, when I look at this, I just look at this, I look at your glucose being, you know, it's 91. That's, for me, it's borderline high, right? I like to see it in the 80s, right? Now that could be a reflection of the high fruit diet. This could be a reflection of all the stress on your system at this point. So again, I would love to see that, and you'll get to the blood sugar module and start doing your own blood sugar tracking and really get a feel for how that works when you're going to work with folks on doing that. And again, you know, I hate looking at blood tests that aren't put in the tracker because I just, you know, I don't remember all my numbers. Your cholesterol's super low, right? So, that may or may not be a problem. That may not give you enough precursor to make sex hormones and DHEA, right? So that can be an issue. Triglycerides and HDL are perfectly in ratio, 56, 56. It's 1-to-1. Those are decent. Your VLDLs are low, which is good. Your total cholesterol, your ratio is all good. It's just this number, you know, it's not cholesterol, the lower the better. This may be fine for you, but it also, no, it may contribute to low testosterone and other things, along the lines of the steroid hormones, right? And this could be as a result of so much physiologic stress on your body since you were just little and having, you know, a lot of it being, you know, your intestines being ripped apart and then surgically, resected and pieces pulled out of you. That's a high stress situation that raises the cortisol, which pulls away and utilizes a lot of the precursors. And it also could raise your blood sugar as well. Okay. So the main things here are, you know, extreme, anemia. Your serum iron is 17. We like to see that 80 to 120, even though their range is 38 to 169. If you look on our tracker and you put it in there, you'll see the optimal functional ranges, and it's more like 80 to 120. And it even says alert, right? And when the lab says alert, we know that it's pretty severe. So that's something to really make sure of. You don't have to take iron supplements, especially if you tend towards constipation. Iron supplements could make it worse, but you could do whole food, based, herbs that are high in iron because they're more concentrated. One of my favorite books, I had it out here the other day, but I think I might have put it away, was, it's called Nutritional Herbology. It's an old book. You can probably get it for $2 or $3 in Amazon Marketplace on Amazon. And it's really good because it gives you from a nutritional perspective what herbs you can use to replenish. Because I know we don't like, you know, I prefer not to take synthetic vitamin supplements because we don't know what we're doing there. I prefer to take foods. And so when you go through there, you can figure out like yellow dock is a super amazing herb that's very high in iron, and it's also really supportive for the liver, and the liver is going to help, you know, with skin and with detox and all the other things that you need it. So yellow dock's an herb you may want to look into. You can make a tincture of it, or you can buy a tincture of it, or you can buy the powder and do teas and things like that. So that can
I actually have a yellow dock tincture right now.
You do? Okay, great. Yeah. So you may have repaired this already because it sounds like you approached it. So, but always, you know, I always feel like when you test something and it's broken, basically, I'll use that word loosely, and then you take some steps to do repair and replenish and rebalance, it's always good to go back and see if what you did is on track and if you need to adjust it in some way. And 6 months is long enough for you to have gotten some good results. And obviously you're feeling much better. And that's another way we have in the history taking part, and in the vitamin and mineral part, we have all the different symptom tests that you can take. So that's a great way interim to doing additional labs. And especially if somebody, you know, if the budget is tight and you don't want to go and do more labs, it's a really good idea to do the before and then the after, because paper pen exams don't cost anything, right? Except for a little bit of ink and a little bit of paper to print them out. But even using the online versions, it doesn't even cost that. So anything else that you want to add to this, that you want to tell people about some of the stuff that worked and didn't work for you? And then I'd love it if anybody else has questions, just pop them in the chat or just open up your line and let's chat with Brandon about this. Where is it?
So, I mean, just in general, just like certain things that I eliminated from my diet that just caused, you know, vomiting or just horrible irritation was like corn.
Corn.
Corn was not good. Beans. I mean, these are things I'll probably never like eat ever again. Mm-hmm. Nutritional yeast. Seems highly reactive. I don't think I'll ever eat that again. I think I can now that I'm healed, but I still have no interest in that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously grains, anything gluten, you know, I'll never eat again.
Right. Yeah. And again, it goes without saying, but for some of you who haven't heard me say it over and over again, anybody who continues to eat gluten-containing products with all the evidence and research is out there in the presence of gut disruption or brain disruption, needs to have an awakening and do that. There's a lot of folks out there saying, oh, this gluten thing, somebody posted a study. Oh yeah, they did a study with 57 people and they fed them muesli bars and the ones that had gluten didn't do any worse than the ones that did. It's a whole farce and people are trying to poo-poo it, but there's actual evidence, there's science that says that it creates a leaky gut in everybody. It's just a matter of time before it actually makes it worse, and genetics play into that and early childhood and all the other stuff, microbiome balance and all that. But seriously, if somebody has gut stuff and they're not willing at least to give a 3-month trial of gluten-free to see how it goes, I would feel like I can't help them, right? I just can't help them. If we say, look, we have to go for food sensitivities because it's so involved here. And even if it's not a lifelong sensitivity, we've got to get the food sensitivities out because they're creating the leaky gut, but then they're getting into your bloodstream and making your whole body worse until you heal the leaky gut. And you can't heal the leaky gut if you continue to scratch it open, right, every time you eat. So it's a really important piece. And a lot of times people want to get away with it. Oh, I just have a little bit here and there. No matter. Doesn't matter. Anything else that you, that yeah, or any
so
supplements?
A lot like popping up over like probiotics and stuff. So I did try like a lot, but like the simpler the strains, just like one, the better. You know, if there was like 5 or 6, that was not good. I think it was causing more dysbiosis. And I've done like a lot of fermented foods. I grow my own garden, so I get to make my own beet kvass and sauerkraut.
Nice.
And, you know, a lot of fermented vegetables I do myself, and like coconut yogurts too. You know, by this point I bought, you know, over 200 coconuts. So that's something I've definitely implemented. You know, even my own vegan kefir, like water kefir.
Yep.
I've done that. So I mean, I've done a lot of fermented things, but I don't think. It almost made it worse when I had like the leaky gut and I was like trying to heal. It made it extremely painful. I felt like I had to like back off. So like now I eat like a lot of fermented foods, but like it did not seem to work, you know, when I was feeling like those leaky gut symptoms. So I had to back off for a while.
That's one of the things people tend to ignore. It's like, oh, this is supposed to be good for me. I have to keep going. So it really brings around to just always, for your own health, being in touch, but also teaching people to totally be in touch that this body is that experiment ground and it's the best lab around because it gives you feedback as to what things are working and what things are not. It doesn't always give you the greatest feedback on what's working, but it's pretty darn quick about telling you what's not working. So heed those messages. Great. Anything more? Anybody have any questions for Brandon or for me about this in particular? I'm going to look to see what's on the chat. Birth and breastfeeding. Yeah, he was not breastfed and his mom had an epidural. So yeah, those are awesome questions. You always want to ask those questions because people don't tend to go back that far. Okay, welcome back, Chet. Glad you're back. Yeah. Assuming vaccinations, did you have the standard vaccines that most kids are given?
Yeah.
Rotavirus vaccine. You know, he probably doesn't know exactly which vaccines he had, but if he had all the standards and that's in the standard routine, there we go. This week, actually, we're having a call with an advanced clinical resource call, or next week, with or is it this week? Now I don't remember. I think it's next week. Next week? Yeah. With a doctor that does homeopathic immune stimulation, and homeoprophylaxis is called, and, you know, avoiding vaccines, but also immune system support using homeopathy. So that would be a fun one for us to be on next week. Let's see. C-section. Was it a C-section? No, epidural, you said. Do you still have amalgams, or have you had those removed?
I still have them.
You still have them. Okay, so those can be, you know, still a trigger in the system. And then, you know, point being brought up is like the fruit feeding a candida overgrowth, if you had that. Have you ever had a stool test?
I never have, no.
Right. So that might be a good thing. You know, maybe you had it when you went to the doctor for all the stuff that they did, but that wouldn't be like a functional stool test, like a doctor's data or one of those. So that would be something to consider doing as well, to fine tune and see, now that you've done all this, what's left. And that's I'm just going to bring this up. This is an approach to testing. I know we all like it. Wow, we could do this test and this test and this test. And it's all exciting as we want all this information. But on the other hand, you know, it is expensive and it can be confusing when you get a lot of data all thrown at you. So, for a lot of folks, you know, you have to be conscious of the budget, like how much can they afford to get testing, and only do the tests that are absolutely needed. And oftentimes what I would prefer to do is start with the basics and just bring the diet up to speed, you know, do the things to help the cleansing, to help them with, you know, the high nutrient dense, whatever it is, superfoods, juices, whatever, and then test. It's not as scientific, because you don't get the, oh, it was this and then we did that and then we got this result. But it does save people the financial stress, because what happens a lot of times, I see this a lot, people will do the expense of having all these tests up front. Right? You go into a functional medicine doctor and you walk out with $1,000 worth of tests, but then they broke the bank and then they can't afford to get the testing on the other end. Right. I'd rather see the testing after we've put into place some of the regimes. Now, that said, somebody might come in to see you and say, I've done this and I've done that, and they've done all the things that you would recommend them. Then that's when doing the testing up front is a super important thing to do. Janice says that Dr. Moore said the kidney pain was from the kidneys not filtering. Well, you know, Dr. Morse doesn't know Brandon, so we can't really say that, but kidney pain can be from a lot of things. And in his particular case, it could have been backup from the bladder, retrograde from the bladder, having been dumped on from the intestinal tract. So there's a lot of possibilities.
I think it was like high oxalate too. I think by that point I was like eating spinach like every single day and just thought it was,
yeah.
I don't think, yeah, it's good.
Yeah. 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 So, you know, and this discussion in the chat about the fruit, the whole fruit controversy, and fruit's good, fruit's bad, fruit's the best food. Everybody should eat like 5 pounds of fruit a day. And the truth of the matter is, it's like, how does your body tolerate it, and who can tolerate it the best? The fruit does not have the high mineral content that you need to remineralize after you've had a lot of loss, especially blood loss with an inflammatory bowel disease. Fruit can be phenomenal. Fruit can be not good for other people. And I think we always just have to keep the individual in mind. If I eat too much fruit, my blood sugar's up through the roof. Having blood sugar up through the roof is not a good thing for my body's healing. So I don't do that. I stick to the low glycemic fruits and I don't do much. Fasting, you know, is one of the best things, but not everybody can tolerate a fast, and they're not maybe in a lifestyle situation where they can. But how can you do? There's this new fasting mimicking diet that's making its rounds that I'm researching right now. So who was it, Janice wanted to know, who was it that you got the high fruit idea from and the fasting ideas? Was there anybody in particular you were studying?
I'm trying to think. I feel like John Kohler.
Okay.
He's okay raw. I didn't even discover Dr. Morse until maybe like 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
He has some interesting things to say. I mean, like, I still think it's very controversial. I mean, like, I don't necessarily believe in like a very fruit-based diet. You know, I do think it's very mineral deplete. I mean, that's why I do have like fulvic minerals and humic acid and that sort of thing, like my water, you know, because I think just in general, all the produce, especially like commercially grown stuff, it's like very deplete, you know, and I can feel it, you know, it's like I want some greens, you know. So now I have like a lot of greens, you know, I'm sprouting in my kitchen, you know, once again, and yeah, growing wheatgrass, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and somebody was saying, oh yeah, it was the lectin diet, what's his name? He was saying how wheatgrass is one of the three worst foods you can eat, probably because of the lectins. And then there's a thought, Pure Encapsulations was bought by Nestle. And Lynn says, I thought it was Garden of Life. What's that about? Oh, both? What does that mean, both?
It was just announced today that Nestle bought Garden of Life and apparently Pure Encapsulations.
Well, I have two feelings about things like that, mixed feelings. One is, wow, these big companies are feeling like they have to get on the wagon of health because that's what people are asking for. But on the other hand, what happens to the quality of a company like both of those companies who are so committed to real quality?
Yeah. It's also been, I've read a couple of articles over the last few days that the plant-based diet is the one to do in 2018. So.
Oh, gee, I've been ahead of myself for the last 35 years. Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, and the trick is, you know, the keto is big, right? And there are definite benefits to doing a keto diet. And we have that whole 20 hour module on food religions, but we talk about the keto, and I'm a big fan of keto diet as a therapeutic tool, but not
you can do a vegan keto,
but you can do exactly. You can do a plant-based keto diet, and it doesn't have to be like with all the animal fats and the, you know, the stuff that we always talked about as being bad, the lard and all that. Now they're suddenly saying that's good. And I've seen people go from a more of a plant-based, you know, high plant diet to small amounts of meat to this keto loaded with it. And they gained 8 pounds and they felt bloated all the time. So it's really a matter of finding what works for each individual person. Yeah. Oxidative stress, of course, is something that all, and psychological, all of that stuff. Nutritional Herbology, Lynn just put up. So if you want that link, it's in the chat. The Floridex, you know, there's Floridex is a lot, it's a high glycemic. So it's really, it's got a lot of fruit in it. So I don't take it because it raises my blood sugar, but, it also, you have to be careful because one of them has, I think it's barley malt or something that's not gluten-free. So they have a couple of versions of that. But I actually use that Floridex for my son when he was born. He had very low iron. He's adopted and he had a very traumatic birth. And he, by the time he was like 6 or 8 months old, we had him tested. And it wasn't because he was sick or anything, but it was, I think he was a year old. It was like a routine thing. In order to get the adoption completed, we had to do like 2 or 3 doctor appointments, which we never did again, by the way. We never took him to a doctor after that, but he had to go and do the, whatever the standard thing was. We never vaccinated him. We were scared that that might prevent us from being able to finalize the adoption, but we got good paperwork through that. But the point was they did the little foot prick to get his blood and to test him for anemia, and he was very anemic. His hemoglobin was like a 5 or a 6, and for a kid that size it should be like 10 or 11. For an adult it should be like 13, 14. He was very anemic. You would never know it because this kid was, you know, he had all the energy in the world, and I'm like, I'm almost afraid to correct this because what's this kid going to be like? But that's what we did. We took the Floridex. We just gave him whatever was appropriate amount for a kid his size. He was a little guy. And within, I think it was 6 weeks, we retested and he was fine. I mean, it jumped, it doubled, it literally doubled in that 6 weeks. So it's definitely a good supplement. You just have to watch it for people who are gluten sensitive and have, glycemia problems. So I think, we're good. All right. Anything else? So food sources of iron. Lynn just put up a good food sources of iron in here. So this looks like a great chat. Let's make sure that this gets captured. Oh, interesting. So Lynn Rose is talking about a vaccine that was put together to prevent rotavirus, was first licensed in 1998, withdrawn in 1999 because of its association with an uncommon type of bowel obstruction called intussusception. But that's kind of where the bowel folds in on itself. So instead of being a tube like this, one of the tubes kind of folds in on itself. That's an intussusception. I think if that's the case, you were probably not an infant at that time and probably didn't get that. Unless it was a school thing that they, you know, made school age kids get. Cause you were born in probably what, about a 90 maybe?
89.
I was going to say 89 or 90. So, okay. All right. Fantastic. Anything else? Dr. Paul Offit owns one of the patents. Okay. Did I miss anything? If I missed anything, just raise your hand up, and otherwise we're going to move on to Mihaela's case. Anybody else have comments or questions? Was this helpful? Was this useful to hear a case like this? Give you some things? Yeah, somebody, I heard somebody's voice. Valerie? No, who was it? Okay. All right, so I'm going to move on to... All right.
Can we know what his symptoms are now?
Sure. Can you give them a rundown of your symptoms now?
I mean, my symptoms now are just like, I would say like low motility if I eat like only twice a day. So I can like experience like some constipation and like I just won't have no appetite at all, and I'll just, you know, feel like kind of like lower energy, you know, I can like feel where stuff is in me, and that's it, you know. I don't have any like gut-wrenching pain or anything, you know. Yeah. I feel good and light, and you know, I feel like I could do anything.
That's awesome. And you're gonna always have to deal with the issue of not having and the cecamelium area and all the nutrients that normally would get absorbed there. So I would just go back through the micronutrient module and see if there are other nutrients you want to make sure that you're getting. And off the top of my head, like I said, you probably look it up if you have this book, which I really like, our book. Where is it? Oh, I had it. Oh, it's down here. This is the book, Advanced Nutrition and Metabolism. And you don't have to get the latest version of it because it's like a couple $100s, but I got this on Amazon for, I don't know, $30. And it's just got a lot of good information. There's plenty of books like that. I've been looking into Dr. Alan Gaby's book on functional medicine. It's like a couple $100s, and I'm trying to negotiate with him for a bulk order to make it less. So I'll let you know about that. Yeah, great. Thank you. All right. Mihaela. Hello, let's unmute you. There you are.
Hi.
Hi. So I'm assuming this is you as well.
It is me.
Yeah. You know, this is a great opportunity for you guys to get your own cases and, you know, get some coaching on what to do. But we want to make sure that they're also very educational for everybody. So let's talk about, and you have some gut stuff as well. So let's talk about, so what are your top three concerns?
So my GI has never, I mean, I've been working on it now for about 3 years and I still feel like I'm not there. I think I have leaky gut and some other things, but, and then my periods are always a problem. But they have improved, but they're still not there.
But when you say problem, let's just be really clear. So when you say your GI, like, right, let's talk about what symptoms you're currently presenting with and what were you presenting with and how's it improved?
Okay. So, pretty much all my life, I had a lot of bloating. So I had like a baseline was bloating, and then on occasion I would get such severe bloating, unable to pass any gas, that I could literally bend over. Like, I could not even stand up straight. I would be crying in pain. and a lot of constipation. I actually sometimes I would go 5 days without any bowel movements. Mm-hmm. And so those were my worst.
And those were your symptoms from when you were a child, or did they, was there a particular point when they started?
Yeah, I started when I was a child. Like, I remember going to school. By the time I would be in the bus station waiting for the bus after having breakfast, I would already be having cramping and bloating. And I never had diarrhea, but it would feel as if I would have it any moment now. So then about 3 years ago,
Before you go on, I just want to ask some of the same questions I asked Brandon. Like, did your parents know about this, and did they take you to doctors? Did any of it get investigated when you were a child?
They did know about it, but they didn't know what to do with me. I did go to the doctor a lot, but I grew up in Romania, and they really love antibiotics there. So basically all my life, I don't think I can count how many times I've been on antibiotics. Hundreds probably.
Okay. So starting when you were a little kid, for this gut stuff or for other things, tonsils?
Well, for any cold. Like, if I would have a cold, they would take me to the doctor, and I would come home with antibiotics. Mm. Any cold, any symptoms whatsoever. At age 12, I had an appendectomy. What else? Oh, I was never breastfed. My mom actually had what she thinks it was mastitis, but they did a surgery, so that's what makes me think it wasn't mastitis. I don't know what it was. Mm. And then the doctor kept telling her to breastfeed me until the nurse that was coming home to visit her took the milk and boiled it, and it turned black. So that's what I was drinking. And then as a baby, like as an infant, like a brand new infant, my mom says that I was covered in boils, probably from all that milk. And and after that, she actually gave me cow's milk, like right after.
So not even formula. She went right to cow's milk.
Right. Back then, they didn't really have formula. We were in a third world country 40-some years ago. There was no such thing, so.
Right. So you had a really tough start, right? So your microbiome never had the ability to really develop properly. Clearly, having broken out in full body rashes says to me there's toxicity, and there's probably gut dysbiosis going on. The liver's having problems right there from the start.
Right.
From the beginning. Okay.
Right. So then all my life I had this baseline bloating that I kind of thought it's annoying, but nobody ever cared. No doctor thought that was a problem. Mm-hmm. And then 3 years ago when I went gluten-free for the first time, all the bloating went away. Mm-hmm. So it was just like a revelation for me to feel like how it really feels not to be in pain. So I still have bloating that comes and goes, but that's cyclic and it's with my period. So I still get some due to hormones.
Mm-hmm. But, and you get it right before the period, during ovulation, right after, during?
Yeah, I get it during my period, like about a day before or the first day. And the last couple of years I had maybe 4 or 5 months that I can think of when I was so bloated that I actually cried. I was like, 2 in the morning, my husband was going to take me to emergency room. But for the most part, my periods have really improved, and I don't have that much bloating. I do have a lot of gas during my periods. But I didn't have that pain anymore. So...
Okay. So, and that's strictly during the periods versus throughout the whole month. So that's definitely a hormonal issue. Probably some prostaglandin issues, maybe some fatty acids and things like that that are out of balance, maybe some magnesium's out of balance at that point. So those are some things to keep on the back burner, and we can come back to.
Okay.
Those are the ways I think. Because I'm thinking, and the reason I ask for cycle, when you hear somebody with cyclical problems in their cycle, you want to figure out what's going on in the cycle hormonally, right? What kind of hormones? So it's very different if the bloating happens or the PMS type symptoms, the agitation, whatever happens at mid-cycle versus right before the period, right? Right before the period, the progesterone's coming down low. So could be some kind of estrogen dominance and inability to fully get rid of the estrogens, right? B6 and magnesium are super important there. And fatty acids, because fatty acids control inflammation, but they also control spasm, you know, so they're going to affect the bloating as well. It could be the ileocecal valve goes into spasm because of some increase in prostaglandins as well. So there's a number of things that could be causing it. So we'll see what we can come up with. So surgeries, you had your appendix removed at age 12. So there right away indicates that there's something to this gut thing, right? So you've been complaining about bloating, but then you have appendicitis and nobody's making the connection between them, right?
Right.
And, yeah. Okay. All right.
So, and my last one of my main complaints, the top three complaints are, I have a lot of pain. So ever since I was in my 20s, I had a lot of, and often I would get like back pains to the point that I couldn't move. I would have to go to a week long of physical therapy, and it would just come up for the most part during stressing times. So usually finals week, anything that would like make me stressed, I would get this back pains. And,
back pain meaning lower back pain, upper, middle?
Lower, upper, middle, kind lower. Of everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Recently I have not had that kind of pain anymore, but I still have back pain, and it's usually upper back. It just gets really spastic. Mm-hmm. And then that leads to headaches.
Mm-hmm.
And and another pain that I had since I was 19, I went to the doctor for the first time. I had wrist pains, and I remember I was in college and I went to student center, and they were like, "Oh, there's nothing wrong with you." They did X-rays to my wrists, and they were like, "Just it's all in your head. Go home." And I had that for 20 some years.
Mm.
And again, when I went gluten-free, that's one pain that went away.
Went away. The wrist pain went away.
Yeah.
But the back pain stayed. Or the back pain, is that when the back, the lower, the
Yeah. Yeah, so it kind of got better.
Yeah.
And I didn't have crisis like I used to. So I have not had one crisis as I used to have where I cannot move.
Got it.
I still have back pain, which is annoying, and I just kind of deal with that's with essential oils and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't, it's not like, it doesn't immobilize me as the other ones.
Definitely improved. But when we ask questions about pain, it's always important. You want to isolate a cause, right? So one thing I like to look at is it pain that's not inconsistently the same place that maybe moves around or is all over in lots of different places in the body. That's that you're looking for more of a systemic cause, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas if somebody says my right wrist hurts, and it hurts mostly when I'm, you know, digging or, you know, cutting food or whatever, there's a mechanical, most likely something that may be aggravated by systemic inflammation, but it's usually that's bilateral pain, multi-area pain. We're always looking for that systemic. There's always going to be some sort of systemic issue going on there. Yeah. Okay.
And most recently, for about a year or so now, I started having my fingers are hurting, and they're really like they're getting worse during the night. So if I wake up at night, I feel very stiff. So I've been kind of thinking that, I mean, it kind of sounds like rheumatoid arthritis, because that's when you get really stiff at night, and then it gets better during the day.
More more like an osteoarthritis would get worse at rest.
Okay.
And better with movement. Okay. But here's the thing, and here's what I want you all to like move away from, and I knew you're traditionally trained as a pharmacist, is we think in terms of diagnoses, and diagnoses are boxes that we put people in. And I don't want to think in terms of boxes. I don't want to think in terms of diseases. I want to think in terms of mechanisms, right? What could be the mechanism of hands stiffening up? So what are some of the things that could cause your body to get worse and have stiffening during the night?
I can't figure it out.
Okay. Okay. So from a nutrient, and I'm just throwing this out there. So my mind is always going, like pulling all the different information that I know about all kinds of things and trying to pull it together. So I think about magnesium. I think about magnesium being needed to oppose contraction. So calcium contracts magnesium. It's a very, very generalist way to look at it, but it's, you need that level of relaxation. So possibly magnesium. So I would be looking at what other signs of magnesium deficiency might you have. You can pull out the magnesium, you know, in the nutrients module, which you haven't gotten to yet because you just started a few weeks ago, but you'll get there. And in fact, it was on, I know I did give, hopefully you guys should check. I gave everybody access to all the old shines and all the documents and the digitals. And in one of many of them, probably it are the nutrient charts. I think it was last year's, because last year was all about clinical assessment. So there's just some charts that show, you know, the different symptoms for the different nutrients. And it's a nice summary. So you might want to go in there and for all of you, take that. And also if you get up to module 3, which I think you are, might be up to, I've seen a couple of your pretests come in or close to being up to it. So module 3, which is the history taking, there's also, the vitamin, charts and stuff that you can use, assessments that you can use. So those are good things to be using, and do it on yourself. I mean, as you go through that module, anybody who's been through it or, is about to go through it, I would highly recommend that you go through all those assessments on yourself, because you get a sense of where some of your imbalances lie. Because all of what we do is about figuring out imbalance and then helping somebody to restore the balance, right? It's not a matter of deciding what disease you have or whatever. Right. Tests are great. They very much help to identify imbalances, and then we want to put balance back in. So I'd look at all those charts and just see where some of those things come about.
Yeah, I've been taking actually a lot of magnesium the last 3 years. Actually, at some point in the first year, I was up to, I think I was taking 15 or more capsules of magnesium a day.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that's a lot.
I still didn't have diarrhea. And sometimes I wouldn't even be regular.
Okay, so here's the thing. That's the thing. Like, people, we have in our head, like, okay, I was taking the magnesium and at some point I should get diarrhea from it. Yeah. But I got all this much, so I might as well. I'm not going to get diarrhea, so I stop. And it mustn't be magnesium. But here's the truth is really – what you want to do is just keep pushing to get to that point, unless it creates bloating, and then that's a problem. It means that it's generating some extra movement, but it's not actually, going through. And it may be, you may have some scar tissue around the ileocecal valve as a result of having an appendectomy at 12, right? So sometimes when there's scar tissue there, things don't pass as well. So I'll get back to the magnesium in a second, but the other thing I'm thinking about is really getting in there and doing like the Mayan massage, or just in general, finding your ileocecal valve and massaging it a couple, 3 times a day,
okay? Right?
Because you most likely do have scar tissue there. I mean, you do surgery, especially when you do surgery on a little body, and that body grows into a big body, you know, there's going to be some tightening there and some scarring there, and it's inevitable. So it's really possible that there is some problem with your ileocecal valve. And you may have had a problem with your ileocecal valve for a long time, you know, based on the symptoms. And maybe that's, you know, they took your appendix. Maybe it wasn't even a problem with the appendix. There was something going on with the ileocecal valve. Maybe in some cases you do. I had my appendix removed just because they wanted to take it out when I had an ectopic pregnancy, which pregnancy growing in the tube. They had to take the tube because the tube had exploded, and they had to go in and do that. And they said, oh, look at that. Let's just take our appendix while we're here. Yeah. And you can't sue them for doing that because it's considered standard of care. Like, you know, they want you to make sure that you, you know, you don't have an appendix that went bad later. So I would be looking at those sorts of things as well.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And the other thing, you know, is like looking back to, it was like to try to find a route, right? So you've had this problem since you were born. You weren't breastfed. You were fed cow's milk. That can be creating problems right there, you know, antibodies. Mom had, did you say C-section or what?
No, it was natural birth.
Natural birth. Mm-hmm. Okay. A natural birth. What was mom's diet like when she was pregnant?
I don't know. All I know is that she didn't eat any sweets. She didn't like them. She didn't have a tooth for it until she hit menopause. So now I can get her off the sweets, but back then
she didn't. So that's good to know.
I don't, but other than that, I don't really know what she.
Okay. And was she a smoker or a drinker?
No, but she worked in an office where every single person smoked and they were allowed to smoke at work. So she was exposed to a lot of,
third hand. Yes.
Second hand.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, you know, nothing extreme that shows up there. And then, you know, there's oftentimes the genetic factors. So if you weren't breastfed, you didn't get colostrum, you didn't get passed on mom's antibodies, your gut flora, well, you did have a natural birth, so you had the opportunity to pass through. Was mom's gut in a healthy state? Did she pass on, you know, who knows, right? So we all have those variables in our background.
I know she had, her gut is really messed up, and at least for the last 30 years that I am aware of, I think she's in a lot of trouble with her gut, but I don't know if it was happening that early when she had me. So I don't know.
So you might also want to look at your 23andMe. Those are all curiosity to see if you have those FUT2 genes. I'd be looking at bifidus supplementation overall. Have you done stool tests? You gave me a whole bunch of tests.
I've done a stool test.
Okay. So we'll look at some of that. All right. Anything else really important in here that we want to know what you've done to date? Diet-wise, you're off gluten. Are you 100% off gluten?
You know what? I've been 100% off gluten for about a year and a half. And after that, I just could not get feeling any better. And I got so discouraged and I kind of went like, forget it. So I just kind of fail every, so basically no, I'm not off.
So I would be looking at, so this is a common problem. You're going to hear it from people. If they have cross reactives, right? Say you have a gluten problem, but you also have cross reactives, you're going to feel somewhat better. And so here's the thing, you got discouraged, and this is getting into the heart and the psyche of your clients that you're going to be, since you're going to be working with, is that you're discouraged, but you have to look back at, wait a minute, you had a tremendous improvement when you first started. And now it's stabled out. It's leveled off. So you go, okay, what's the next thing that's going to give me the next big bang for the buck? But you can't give up on the thing that caused you such a great improvement, because it's going to back you up, and that's going to make it even a longer haul to get to the heart of this. So I don't know if you've done a complete, you know, allergy elimination diet, a fast, a juice cleanse, or anything like that.
So I've done a couple of times. I did a liver cleanse, and I've done. So I've done a lot of green smoothies, but not juices. I struggle a lot with dizziness in the last, in the last 3 years, for about almost 2 years, I had a lot of dizziness. I tried a ketogenic diet that made me even worse. Mm-hmm. But blood sugar, when I first started, was in the 90s. So I kind of figured I have some insulin sensitivity. Resistant.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to work on that, but when I tried the ketogenic diet, I was just so dizzy, I couldn't even drive the car. I was like,
cool. Yeah.
So your body wasn't able to shift. So the explanation when people have that reaction is, so in a ketogenic, the idea is to be able to shift so that you go from burning sugar to burning fat. Some people take a very long time to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Some people do it like that. I can do it in 2 or 3 days. I'm completely shifted. In fact, sometimes shorter than that, and I feel phenomenal. But mm-hmm. the point is that if your body's still relying on sugar mm-hmm. and it's not there, and you deplete your glycogen stores because you've been doing a ketogenic diet for X number of days, you don't even have glycogen, you don't have sugar to burn, you're going to have some issues, right? And so that means that that approach wasn't the best approach for you. Right. Doesn't mean you throw the whole thing out. It's a matter of tailoring it and figuring out how to do it right for you.
Okay. So I tried that, and when my blood sugar would actually go in the low 80s, high 70s, I would feel like I would have a hypoglycemic event with shaking, with like more dizziness. So, and I know that that's completely ideal numbers, and yet I was feeling awful.
Yeah.
A lot of times when I would eat protein, and I tried almonds and that kind of stuff, more like vegetarian type of proteins, I did not feel well. And when I would eat eggs or meat or anything like that, then I would feel better. So, and then about this spring at some point, the dizziness went away, and I have no idea why. Just went away. My blood sugar has been in the low 80s since then. Mm-hmm. About a month or maybe two ago, I read a book on niacin, and they were talking about the pain. And so I tried the niacin, and I think that increased my blood sugar. So it went up in the 90s again. Mm-hmm. And then I backed off on the dose, and last time I checked my blood sugar, it was again in the 80s. So okay. Hopefully that's all.
Does niacin help with your pain?
It helps with the pain, but not fully. Yeah. But I never maybe to the, because I know the book recommended like 1,000 milligrams 3 times a day.
Ooh,
and I only got to maybe 500 twice a day.
Flushing niacin or non-flushing?
Not flushing. Yeah. And I never, I only had flushing once.
Really?
But I started very low. I started with 50 and I went up.
You went up gradually.
Over a month or so.
Okay. Yeah. And it might be worth experimenting with to find a dose that doesn't. So keep monitoring the blood sugar. And, mm-hmm. you know, as soon as you start to see it creep up a little bit, to just stabilize yourself on that dose rather than giving it up completely.
Yeah. And then I took a lot of vitamin C. And when I started doing that, a lot of my period symptoms got much better.
Okay.
So between Chase Tree and, the vitamin C, my period symptoms improved tremendously, but I'm still not there. And my hormones are in the bottom of the barrel, basically.
Let's look at some of the tests, because I don't want to run out of time, but it sounds like you've tried a lot of things, and some things you're definitely making improvements. So I would make sure that you have your list of what things you know have given you some improvement, what things you know haven't done anything, and then anything that's made you worse. And then let's look at, see what your tests are showing you might need to really be focusing on. Diet-wise, like, just run through me what your breakfast, lunch, dinner is on a typical day.
On a typical day, my breakfast is like coconut milk with some chia seeds, sometimes flaxseed. Sometimes I put lemon essential oil. Sometimes I do cocoa powder, kind of like that, like variations of that, basically.
Do you ever do any greens in the morning? Do you do like a green smoothie, a green juice?
Well, I did that for about a couple of years. Lately, I've been working a lot, and I leave the house at 6 a.m., so I don't use the machine because you wake up the kids.
Yeah,
so
you can make them in advance. So that's right. We make them, and we make 3 days worth.
Keep it
in the fridge. Yep. Yeah, my husband usually makes them at dinner time, and then we use them for the next 3 days and then make more. So you don't have to do them fresh. Yeah, yeah, it's not as good fresh. Well, it's better not fresh. It's better when it's a day old than not at all.
Oh, really?
Right? Because yeah. You got to always look at, we can't be perfect and ideal. And it's a really good thing to start your day with the greens, with the chlorophyll, with all the alkaline minerals and all the stuff that the greens have in them. So I would experiment with that.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. I want to see you getting greens at every meal.
Yeah, and I then for the breakfast, for the lunch and dinner, most of the times I have. So I eat a lot of cabbage, broccoli, what else? Brussels sprouts, a lot of arugula, spinach. So I do a lot of that, and with some kind of protein. That's kind of what my lunches are and dinners. I eat some quinoa, some rice. That's probably about.
Okay. So you have a clean diet. You may not be as nutrient dense as it could be, but definitely with all those greens and stuff, you're getting a lot of good nutrition.
Yeah. Interesting.
What about omega-3s?
I do take a supplement. I do eat a lot of avocados, a lot of coconut oil. I know that's more omega-6. Macadamia nuts.
Okay. Yeah. None of those are omega-3s, but the flax and the chia are omega-3. And then the fish would be omega-3. Algae would be omega-3. And then if you take a supplement of EPA, DHA, that would be.
So I do take a supplement.
You take more around your period, or you take the same amount all year long, all month long?
I kind of take about the same, but yeah, I know I should probably.
Yeah, I would just experiment with doubling it maybe 4 or 5 days before your period.
Okay.
And then through, whatever 4 or 5 days into it. Same thing with magnesium.
Okay.
B6. Double whatever you're taking normally throughout the month, but double them for that period, like say 4 days before your period to 3 days after it starts.
Okay.
Just see how that goes, because all those nutrients have a higher demand in the body around then, and that may help with the hormonal stuff. So let's look at some of your testing. It looks like this is your, this is an old one, though. This is a year old.
Right, and I think this is kind of almost my last one. I have not.
Okay, so again, get some lab testing if you can. If you have your lab, you can get it.
Yeah, I just signed up for the $59.
Yeah, but that doesn't have all the other stuff. So your T3, TSH is 1.1, is fine. Your T4 is good. Your T3 is a little low. So I would say you have a conversion issue. Conversion issues are, gut. It could be liver. 75% of it is done there. So supporting that more, which we'll look at a little bit. But also selenium is important. Magnesium, zinc, those kind of minerals are important for that as well. And then stress, we'll look at your adrenal test as well. FSH, progesterone, 0.36. What time of month was this taken?
It was actually, second or third day of my period.
Okay, so the follicular phase. So you're at 0.36. So you're in the range of for follicular phase. The best progesterone measures are often like around day 20 to 20. 20 is probably 21 because that's when it peaks, and it's just like seeing if you're making enough. You're taking Chase Tree, and this, were you taking Chase Tree when you had this taken?
Yeah.
We started it before this. Chase Tree, for those of you who don't know, is also known as Vitex, and it helps stimulate progesterone production. Estradiol, 3.4. If I look at your range there, or 33.4, you're around the same. It doesn't seem like you're much in the way of estrogen dominant. Again, this is not my favorite way to test for hormones. I'd rather see you do a Dutch test. That's probably a good thing for you to think about doing, is a Dutch test. Your testosterone's low. Sex hormone binding globulin's okay. We always look for that being high because it binds up the stuff that's not a problem. Your D is low. So, whatever D you were taking up to this, I would be doubling it and definitely getting your D again. I really think that when we're working with people, we should be getting them to do their D every 3 months until they get it stabilized. And then, you know, you'll get in a sense of, like, if you do it every 3 months for a year, you'll get a sense of how much do they need in the summer versus the winter. Where do they live? Like, you know, Brandon was saying he was out all summer long with his shirt off in the garden versus somebody who lives in Canada, right? You know, or Portland or someplace like that where they hardly ever see the light of day. You know, the sun makes a big difference. Okay, so adrenal, what did you get? This is, you have two adrenals. Are these the same ones? Just... No, so this was 922. This was 7. This was 9. This was 2. Let's order them.
Yeah, that was.
This is the most recent. Yeah, there are two of them. Okay, so your most recent one was still over a year ago. So we really don't know where you are right now. So we could just give you a couple of pointers onto where you were. You were definitely low in your first morning. And I like to look at, when I look at these, I look at the total cortisol is in the range, 22 to 46. So that means you're either normal or stage 2, right? So this is just a gross. You'll learn more about it in the adrenal module. But normal or stage 2. And then, but when we look at it, it's not normal, right? It's not following that nice, beautiful path. So we're going to say you're in a stage 2 adrenal fatigue. Okay. And it's just to give it a name, right? Right. So the first morning is depressed. The others are within the normal range, but they're not following the curve in the right way. Let's look at your DHEA. And your DHEA is low. I like to see this, you know, minimum 6, but, you know, 7 to 8 would be better. So your DHEA is low, plus you've got the normal cortisol, low DHEA right away puts you into, you know, classified as a stage 2. And if you also look at the curve, then that confirms that. Your insulin, you know, I think they stopped doing these, because we don't know how accurate that is, but, fasting is 4 and not fasting is less than 0.3. That doesn't make sense.
Exactly. And I don't know.
That doesn't even make sense that your insulin would go down, which, insulin going down, it, you know, it would explain how you would have, you would feel off because your blood sugar's high. I would love to see when, if you were still getting the dizziness, I'd tell you to be tracking your sugar all the time so you could see what it is throughout all the dizziness. Because if it's high, but not getting into the cells, because there's low insulin production, but it doesn't make sense that it goes down. You know, unless there's some pancreatic failure. I'd rather see you do it in the blood and see what the insulin is in the blood. Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure how to interpret it in the saliva. Progesterone, salivary. So you're a little bit high on the secretory IgA, meaning that you're fighting something. And you had gluten sensitivity again. I don't know how accurate the saliva test is for gluten sensitivity. I've had seen some of them. Let's see what this was. This was a year before. And it looks almost the same, doesn't it? It doesn't look much different.
A little bit the morning.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you're a little better here. Your total is 20, went from 22 to 26. So the total, the morning is a little, it's around the same, but you're better throughout the rest of the day. So it looks like whatever you'd done between the two made some improvement there. Let's just look quick at the DHEA. 7, but your DHEA went down and your saliva cortisol. Okay, let's look at some other stuff. This is your blood. Okay, so you did put it in your blood cam. Yay.
This was the provider. He had this.
Oh, your provider had the same test. Okay,
yeah, great. Yeah.
All right. Oh, it doesn't have all the cool reports. He didn't give you all the cool reports. All right. Yeah, your glucose runs high, doesn't it? I mean, it's just generally run high, and this is for, yeah. BUN a little bit high, a little bit of kidney stress.
Yeah.
CO2 low, you know, kind of acidic, so really focusing on bringing up the alkaline minerals in your body. Phosphorus, let's see. And magnesium until here is still on the low side for the blood. Now, blood cell, like serum, magnesium is not the best way to test. Red blood cell is. So, you know, there are tests. You can do SpectraCell, you can do NutriVal, or you can just order a red blood cell magnesium.
Oh, I did submit to you a SpectraCell.
Okay, we'll look at the SpectraCell then. LDH, iron is high, and that's often indicative of, and it's going up, you know, a lot. It's gone from 58 low to 142. So you want to be looking at what's going on with your liver. High iron and low ferritin can often be a sign of melatonin deficiency. So that's something to look at too. Because you'd expect if the iron's high, the ferritin would be high. Like, why didn't the body take it and store it? And it turns out to store it, that melatonin is a cofactor for one of those reactions. Triglycerides are high. Higher than I'd like. I like to see them 75 or below. Mm-hmm. Your HDLs are okay, so it's not so far off, but definitely that high cholesterol, something going on with your fat metabolism. And also, you know, not making enough, if you're not making enough cortisol, even though you have plenty of precursor, cholesterol is one of the precursors, I'd look at vitamin B5. You'll learn more about that in the adrenal module, but vitamin B5, pantothenic acid, this reaction from cholesterol down to pregnenolone has a cofactor of vitamin B5. So I see that a lot where the sex hormones are low, but the cholesterol is high. And we use that a lot in adrenal fatigue. So you might want to look at that. I usually do, you know, at least in the early stages, 500 milligrams three times a day. And the free T3 is definitely low. We talked about that. And it was better over here. So it's interesting. Homocysteine. Yeah, there's inflammation going on. B12, B6 folate. Are you taking any of those?
I'm taking a B complex, and in addition, I do a B12.
Yeah. So you have you been doing more of it since you saw this, or you've been doing it all along?
Consistently since like 3 years ago.
I would up your B12, but be careful without knowing your genes. Just go slowly, but be careful. Make sure it's a sublingual. The B12, quite frankly, in the a complex, is not going to be that well absorbed. Because, you know, most people low stomach acid, not making enough intrinsic factor. Plus you probably have scar tissue down in that area because of the appendicitis. So I would just, I like the liquids from Seeking Health.
Yeah, I do the liquid.
Increase it a little bit and up it. And then I would get another test for sure.
Quick question on that one. Would you worry about hypokalemia with that one? B12, have you heard of that?
Hypokalemia?
Uh-huh. Like that some people, when they take B12, for some reason, they end up having dangerously low
levels. I've not heard of that. If you have any studies on that and you want to shoot me some links, I'd take a look at it. But
yeah, I had a debate with an MD and a PharmD this week. So, and they're like, oh, B12 is crazy. And we had patients come in the hospital being admitted with that. And then I actually Googled and I saw that people are reporting that that has happened to them, but I have not seen actual studies.
Yeah, so I want to see. Yeah. Okay. I'll Google it. I would want to see like what, you know, cause people just like to spread hearsay too. Right. So what could be that mechanism? Yeah. There may be a possibility. What was the amount of B12 they were taking? Some people are going and taking 5 grams to, you know, 15 grams. That's a ridiculous amount or milligrams of B, you know, and do they have methylation issues? Are they taking that? And is it causing some backup of the methyl groups that aren't being able to be processed? I mean, there's so many possibilities there. And, you know, just a couple of clinic, you know, anecdotal cases without really looking at it and analyzing it, you can't make a generalization. You need B12. Right. Excess of anything can be a problem. So whenever you go into more than you need, but clearly I don't think you're getting more than you need, right? Because B12, B6, folate, you take that combination, it usually brings down homocysteine rather quickly. And I'm not talking 3 years like it is here. Right. I'm talking quite quickly, like, you know, 3 months.
Okay.
Okay, so if you were taking enough, and make sure that there's the folate as well, the B6, the folate, because we don't know which one it is. I mean, you could isolate which one it is by doing a methyl malonic acid, and that'll isolate to the B12, and then there's some testing in the organic acids that has a marker for the folate. And B6, you know, we can guess at B6 by looking at these. Then they are on the lower side, you know, the ALT, ASG, GSG, because those are, B6 is a cofactor. Doesn't mean it, because they're still good. If they were a 6, I'd say, I'd be worried about B6. And then Alk-Phos, your Alk-Phos is low. Oftentimes that's related to zinc deficiency, because it's a zinc deficient enzyme. It does have a little bit of B6 involved with it too. So I don't see any downsides of taking moderately large doses of B6, 25 to 50 milligrams of P5P could be quite helpful, especially with all the period stuff, right? With the hormonals. Your CRP was high before, but now it's fine. So your homocysteine is coming down. It's moving in the right direction. I just think you can get it to go faster if you would, you know, take just a little bit more of, and it doesn't necessarily a lot more. You can titrate. Fibrinogen is high. That's clotting, right? So, you don't want the combination of high LDLs, where was your LDL, and high fibrinogen, because that's, and high homocysteine. So that needs to be addressed. I would look at your omega-3s. I would look at whatever you take in for omega-3s, maybe look at doubling it. So a little low on the white blood cell counts, a little high on the red blood cell counts consistently. Again, there's higher risk of clotting disorders, you know, of stroke, and heart disease, right? When you have thicker blood, right? And so you've got some of those risk factors. So those are things to look at. Nisin's a good vasodilator, but there's more than vasodilation and blood sugar, right? Blood sugar is a big issue. And right. I think it's maybe fasting and keto is not the right move for you, but I'd look at what we do in our sweet spot and just look at that metabolic reset and try to do that, which is it doesn't get you into ketosis. It might get you into mild nutritional ketosis as opposed to severe, but you'd move to it slowly. You test some of your foods, but then do it for 30 days because I'd want to get your blood sugars under control. And it's just all of those things would play into risk factor.
Okay.
This just shows a little bit of anemia and it's probably where's your MCV? Yeah. Okay, so consistently high MCV, right? Plus homocysteine. So it's clearly the B12 folate issue, right? Because B6 doesn't even play into that. And I'm not saying that, you know, B6 couldn't be helpful, but B12 or folate, it's most likely going to be the B12, right? You eat a lot of greens. Okay, you eat a lot of greens, but the B12 is much harder to get dietarily. And your monocytes are high, so that you wrote it down there, inflammation for sure, you know, a chronic low-grade infection, or it's in the healing stages, but 3 years of it, nope, sorry, it's chronic, right? It's something chronic, so it's a matter of what is that chronic? The bands, the neutrophils, the lymphs, they're balanced, so we're not like pointing to, oh, viral or bacterial, eosinophils are fine and basophils are fine, so it could be a viral thing. You know, it could be that there's some, especially with some, you know, maybe that's why the liver's having trouble with converting the TSH, I mean the T3, the T4 into T3. I don't know if you've had any panels, but you might want to look at that. Epstein-Barr, cytomegalovirus, you know, any of those kind of things might be an issue. And again, we can test for it, we can label it, we can name it, or we can address it. There's some good evidence. There's some, you know, good stuff that is all food based in the medical medium book. I don't agree with everything he says, but I really like some of the approaches he takes with food based approaches to Epstein-Barr, and that a lot of people have a low grade Epstein-Barr that may not even show if you did a titer, right? But could be there. So you might want to look at that. And that could help. That could be affecting your gut and everything else and your liver. What else do we have here? I know you had a couple more. You had a food allergy. What's this one? Oh, this is another. Oh, I think this is the same one. I must have opened it twice, or you put it in there twice. Yeah, nine. Yeah, it's the same one. Okay. And that I want to, this is the one I really want to look at. This, oh, we looked at the blood test. I want to look at the stool. So this is the BioHealth 401H. This was, again, a little over about a year and a half ago. And no H. pylori. This is one of the best tests for H. pylori. This is the one I trust the most. So usually when it's negative, it really is negative. Some of the others show negative, and then you run this and it's positive, you know, because I've been persistent when I see people with signs and I really believe they have it. So now I just do this. But you do have some Klebsiella, right? And Klebsiella is one of those can migrate up and get into the small bowel. So there could be a little bit of SIBO overgrowth. You know, assuming that, I think that, what did you do to address this when this came back?
Nothing at that time. I also recently, I did realize I have candida, and the doctor that did the sex hormones, he's like, well, I was a sugar addict for most of my life. I had all those antibiotics. It's like, you've got to have candida. So he actually treated me back in January with fluconazole. And after that, actually most recently, about a couple of months ago, for the first time, I ended up having an yeast infection that actually had symptoms. Mm-hmm. So I went to the OB, and she told me that I do have candida overgrowth. So for about a month now, I've been treating myself with herbal antibiotics. So I did wormwood. I even did black walnut, although I am allergic to walnuts because I didn't realize there's black walnut in there.
But it's a tincture. So it may not be, because it's when you're allergic to something, it's protein that you're allergic to. And when you tincture something, a black walnut tincture, there's no sign.
It wasn't a tincture. It was in a tablet form.
Yeah.
And so I've done, but in any case, I've done some of that, a lot of, so right now I'm taking Candidex. It's from Numerica, I think.
Okay.
Something. But it has more of like oregano oil. I'm forgetting what's in there, but.
Here's what I recommend. I would say you need to have a plan, right? You need to get some testing done and have a plan, follow the plan, and then get retested. Right?
Okay.
So when you're doing candida or bacteria or anything, they form biofilms. They've been there for a while and it's been chronic, and you don't work at getting the biofilms reduced, you're going to keep getting it back. So my recommendation would be to start this, like, we get into a new year, you have a whole new plan in front of you, is to get, I would get the doctor's data comprehensive with parasitology times 3, because you just want to make sure you rule out parasites. We'll see exactly what's in your gut right now. It'll show the normal flora. It'll show inflammatory markers. It'll show butyrate. It'll show, what else? It shows pancreatic function. It shows a lot. Okay. You get that as a baseline, but whatever, and then it does a sensitivity. So if anything shows up that you have, you know, Klebsiella, they'll run a sensitivity against it to see which herbs, which pharmaceuticals as well would affect it. Right. And then you make a decision, and then we do a rotating process. You don't just take something and take it for 3 months. You rotate, because these bugs, they get adapted pretty quickly. You know, this antibiotic resistance happens in the pharmaceuticals. It happens in the herbals as well. So you do, biofilm disruptors. Yeah. You do an alternating round of the different microbials that are going to help it. You're going to work on healing the lining of the gut, whether that be, you know, some plantain or marshmallow or slippery elm or some combination of it. And just let's see what shows up there. And then with the idea that 3 to 4 months later, based on what you see, you go back and you do it again.
Okay.
Okay. In the meantime, redo the blood tests as well.
Okay. So this is Doctor's Data.
Doctor's Data. Yeah, you can, if you go to my site, Dr. Rita Marie, well, whatever, it's on the sidebar of the, we should, Lynn, make a note that we should add the link, the direct link to that lab testing page on the INE site as well as on the other site. But if you go to drritamarie.com/lab testing, you'll have to log in using your same user ID and password as you use to get into the NEPT site. And then you'll just look down there and you'll see all the tests that we can order. But you're a pharmacist. You should be able to order it yourself.
Yeah, I'm a provider with doctor's data.
Oh, okay. So it's the comprehensive stool and parasitology. Let me just see if I can find it. Yeah, if you have an account, just order it through your own account. My pages. Let me see if I can do it this way. It used to redirect. Let's see if it still does. I'll share the screen when I find it and I'll show you which one it is. This has been my favorite. I mean, some people like the Genova. I just, you know how you get used to reading a certain test, and I really find it to be helpful. I find it to be very effective. Our new site should be hopefully up soon, so we don't have to. I could have gone into the new site, couldn't I have? Yes, I could have. Ah, okay. So this is the test, and it has, if I go to Doctor's Data, it's this one here. No, that's the minerals. Yeah, comprehensive stool analysis with parasitology times 3.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm pretty sure, let me look at the details of it. No, I'm pretty sure this is the one. Comprehensive. Yep. Yep, that's the one. Okay. Now make sure that it says that it does the sensitivities. So when you go to the Doctor's Data site to order it, you'll see that it has, it'll say it does the sensitivities.
Okay.
Okay. That's okay. What I would do. All right. All right. So let me go back to share. Where's that screen that I was sharing? Okay. Yeah. Cause if you haven't done anything in particular, that might be still be there. They could be creeping up. You know, if we do see some signs that there's, problems with bugs that could be, SIBO related, then we'd look at the whole SIBO thing. And you guys should have access. I think we opened up the full CMDS and IRSPT programs to you guys when you joined NEPT, as opposed to having to wait to do them in order, because some people like to do those right away. I'm pretty sure. And if not, we can open that up for you to go through that yourself.
Okay.
Blood history, and the last one was food allergies. You know, not a major. How old are these? Again, they're a year and a half old, so probably not all that telling anymore. Let me see if I can do an enlargement here. No, I don't think 6,000%. I think maybe 150%. No, maybe just 100%. All right. All right, so this is, I've never heard of this KMBO diagnostics. It's showing that you have English walnut, so it's not black walnut, it is different, bacon and salmon, pineapple and vanilla, garlic, navy bean, a coffee. So did you follow an elimination diet with all these things?
I did, yeah. Okay. Yeah, and actually when I decided to do this test, I had such severe allergy symptoms. Like I was sneezing all the time. I was itching everywhere. And when I eliminated the foods, actually pretty much everything that's on that list, within 2-3 days, I was completely back to normal.
Wow. Wow. That's great. I love to hear that. Love to hear that. Did you slowly but surely add these back in, or are you still off of them?
I'm still kind of trying garlic, but I can't quite tell. And garlic and vanilla are so hard to stay away from them because they're absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel as if I do have a reaction, but I'm not sure. Usually I get a higher heart rate when I eat something. I can't quite tell. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times there's more than one thing in there, so it's hard to kind of...
Yeah, if you did a complete elimination, the best way to go back is to just one at a time take them and try them. Usually I start with the lowest responsive add one. You say, okay, I just added garlic. Okay, that seems to be okay, right? Do it for 3 days, do a lot of garlic, and you seem to be like there's no symptoms coming back. Then you pick another one and then another one. And you just add them too so that you become, and if you start to get a symptom, then you back off. And it may be the quantity or whatever. But healing leaky gut's a super important thing because we want to blame the food for causing us problems. But the food is just innocent bystander, right? It's the leaky gut. Okay?
Right. All right. Yeah, clearly, pretty much everything I was eating, it's on the list. So
yeah, there you go.
I know it's leaky gut. So for the last month or so, I started doing
Oh, you've been here.
Colostrum.
Yes, right. Yeah, colostrum.
Mm-hmm. I run the colostrum and I'm doing maca from Annika Becca. So that has a lot of, I think it even has probiotics in there. A lot of greens, a lot of,
right.
You know, I was going for the hormones and the leaky guts. So I'm trying.
Yeah, so go through the module in CMDS on leaky gut and see, you know, what things in there you can, you know, help. Create yourself a leaky gut protocol. I would also focus on those B vitamins because I think that's a big important issue as well. Mm-hmm. Right? And then you said you had a SpectraCell. I don't see that one.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, wait, micronutrient. There we go. I was there. All right, good.
Yeah, I'm deficient on the Bs.
Yeah, Bs, right? See, so all it's really great when they all like connect with each other, right? So the symptoms, then what happens is you learn to trust without having to run a $600 test, right? If you just keep doing it, you go, wow, I guessed that. Wow, I predicted that. Then right. You can be a little bit, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years. And so I don't run as many tests as people think I run because I kind of can trust my gut and my clinical skills. But yeah, so what? There you go. Folate, B12, B2, okay. B12, yeah, all the stuff we talked about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Serine, panethene. Here we talked about B5, right? Panethenic acid. B3 is the niacin. You said you did get some response. You just have to find that right dose that doesn't throw your blood sugar off. So just start testing your blood sugar regularly and figure that out. Carnitine is going to help you with your fat and your energy production from fat. So that could be related to why you didn't do well on ketogenic because your body, you just can't get the fat into the cell to be able to utilize.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, there's just so much, and that's why the program is just so comprehensive and I teach so many in-depth stuff is because the more you go through it and the more repetition, the more you start to, your brain just goes in these directions, right? Of, yeah, so maybe that carnitine. So maybe supplementing with some carnitine, acetyl carnitine, I don't know, 500 milligrams or something. That might be a good thing for you to approach with this. We talked about the B5. We talked about the B1. You know, B1 is very important for blood sugar balance as well. I tend to like the metformin just because it's easily absorbed, but you know, it's Seeking Health has that one. We pretty much talked about how serine, serine calms down, or phosphatidylserine can calm down, cortisol levels, but it's also, membranes, lipid membranes, any of the phospholipids. Let's see, Spectrox. And they give you some numbers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would just address these things that you're finding. Yeah, I would address them. Okay? Mm-hmm. Because it makes sense with the rest of the picture. When we do a test like this in isolation, it may not make sense in terms of the rest of the picture and we may vary from it, but this does make sense. I don't know, you know, the serine, I would be looking at, what did they say? I don't know what amounts, but. Let's see where that one, yeah, the K2 and the biotin are the most. Do you have any hair loss?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did for the, like during the spring and summer, it was really bad. And so then I started taking a B complex in addition to the, I was taking a B6 niacinamide, which is one supplement, and then the B12. I've been doing it consistently. And I did take biotin about a year ago, a couple of bottles, and then I stopped. Mm-hmm. And so when I, in the fall, when I started the B complex, my hair loss subsided.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I always like to look at food as well as supplements. So you look these up in the micronutrients, but also in the, where else can we find it? Oh, you have access to our ERC Foundations program. And if you go to the Foundations NEPT page at the top, it says, hey, we recommend you start over here. Click onto that. You'll have to log into the other site. And in pillar four is nutrition. One of those is vitamins and one of them is minerals. And there's some charts in there that we picked up. You know, it's basically all just from online sources, but I collected them in one place. So it's easy for you to have. And it looks at foods. You know, what are the top foods that you can be incorporating so that, yeah, you maybe take supplements while it's really low. These are borderline, but still. And then you can move to just the foods. Sometimes just the foods alone may not be enough to get you over the big hump.
Right.
Okay. Any questions?
Do you think I should spend the money to do an organic acid or a Dutch test? Or should I just start with this? And then
I would start with the stool. I would start with the stool and the blood. Redo those. Get those things handled. Then you can and get the blood sugar handled.
Okay.
Then I would go back and do the Dutch.
Okay.
I mean, you could do it now, but you know, it's money, right? It's do it now and then do it later. Or get the basics. I like to start with the blood sugar and the gut. Get that stuff cleaned up and then you can go back and do the Dutch.
Okay.
Right. And all the things that we talked about are going to help support those hormones anyway, the B6, the magnesium, the stress reduction, the B5 for the creating more precursors. A lot of the stuff will help that in general. Right.
So, so clearly, cause I've been taking all the supplements for the last 3 years and I just, nothing really seemed to go up. After a year and a half, I was still deficient. So I think it's leaky gut and somehow I'm not absorbing the food. So,
right.
But yeah, I'm looking forward not to take so many supplements.
and as much as you can, get them liquid and ionized minerals, liquid powders that you can dissolve in. So you don't have the capsules. Cause a lot of times people you just don't break down the capsule itself very well. And so you don't get much out of it. And the more whole food forms that you can, concentrated stuff, you know, concentrated herbs, get that nutritional herbology book and see how can you put together like an herbal protocol that brings these levels up without having to take so many of the supplements.
Okay. And let me double check. So the blood sugar, I should follow.
In the Sweet Spot program, which you should have access to. If you have access to IRSPT, and if not, let us know. Those should be open to you. But in there, there's something called the metabolic reset at a glance. You could start with that. But test your blood sugar. Use the chart that we have on the glucose testing page, which I know you have access to, and measure your blood sugar right before when you first get up in the morning, right before each meal. If you take a bunch of supplements, measure it after the supplements as well, because sometimes there's excipients and other things in the supplements that cause it to go up. And just kind of for a few days, map it out.
Okay.
Map it out. I like every 15 minutes after meals for a little bit, just to get a good map of what's going on with you. And then you adjust that based on what's causing it to go up and what might be causing it to go down.
Right.
If you skip, I would deliberately skip like, you know, six hours minimum between meals and see what happens. Do you get a reactive hypoglycemia? Or when you're feeling these feelings of like, I need food, is it actually because your blood sugar is high? It's just not getting into the cells. And that's a shocker for a lot of people. Like, oh, I feel this hypoglycemia. I got to eat. Oh, let's test your blood sugar. And they find out that their blood sugar is up to 160 when they feel that way.
Okay.
Like that. Oh, insatiable hunger I have to eat now is oftentimes a sign of high blood sugar, not low.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when you do the blood test, do your fasting insulin, do your hemoglobin A1C, mm-hmm. do your vitamin D on top of what they already do.
Yeah, my hemoglobin A1C, when I first started 3 years ago, was about 5.8.
Mm.
And then after about 6 months, it went down to 4.8. But I was still super dizzy, super like, so. Wow. So it improved a lot, but.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then, yeah, so just to talk about the hormones, not the hormones, the supplements, I was taking a lot of supplements, and sometimes I really feel like I feel sicker after the supplements than...
It's possible. It's too much, right? It could be too much for your body.
Yeah, and then I had muscle testing done, and 2/3 of my supplements I was sensitive to, and I eliminated those, and I think that's when my dizziness went away.
Okay, so yeah, it was a reaction. We, you know, there's so much, and we just want to keep adding supplements to it, and that's not what I'm, that's why I said get the charts and add the foods. The B's I would, the B, especially the B12 and the folate.
Okay.
I would definitely be looking at that. Okay. Yeah. For sure. And what I would also recommend, let me switch screens to share, new share. I'm going to share this one. And we're going to go to, I have too many windows open. Let me find it. Let's see. We're going to go to the master tracker. Let's see if I can find it here. Resources, lab testing. See, this is the glucose testing resources. You see that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be where you'll see the charts where you could keep track and all the instructions on how to do that, what the best meters are, et cetera. Blood sugar balancing,
healing. Health trackers under NEPT resources.
It's under NEPT resources. Yeah. Okay, there we go. So master health tracker. Hopefully this leads to the, I'm hoping this leads to the one that's online as of, yeah.
Yeah, and it's got all those videos.
Good. It's got, so the master tracker, you have all these videos. Oh, why is this leading to someone? Somebody edited this. This shouldn't have been editable. Whose is this?
Jane is in, I think, IRSPT.
How would she have gotten access to this?
I have no idea. You had, I thought you had done it so she couldn't.
Holy cow. Well, we're going to have to save this for her, send it to her, but then this is going to get wiped out and we're going to have to make this so that nobody can, it's all totally viewable only. And then you make copy of it on your own. Whew. Okay. I thought you had. I thought so too. All right. So this is the thing I'm looking at for you. If you've gotten a lot of supplements for all of you, start tracking your own. Brand name, the supplement name, the dose you're taking, the timing and frequency, why you're taking it, the date you started, the date you stopped. If you don't know exactly, you could just say, you know, mid-2015 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if you had any problems with it the day you stopped and then any reactions you had, and then I always like to put an ingredient. So as I'm doing an intake with clients, I want to make sure that I get them to fill this out, and if they've sent me a paper, we'll put it in here for them, and I'll put links. If I say, hey, I'd like you to start taking some B6 or whatever, I'll usually put links right here. But I ask them to put a link to or exact name of the thing. Ingredients-wise, if there's just a few ingredients, they could just write the ingredients in, but most things are complicated enough that I want to go to the website and see the excipients. But this is something for you to keep track of. You can actually do multiples of this. There's the discontinued. So if there's stuff that you have been taking that you still have at home, but you stopped taking because you felt dizzy from it or whatever, the ones that that were muscle tested not to be effective for you, put them all on here so you have track of it. And that way over time, you're going to be able to go back, not relying on the old memory, which not always were, oh, when did I start that? And how did I react to that? I don't remember because it's too much to remember. That's why writing it down. And then if you have a conversation, like we just had a conversation, you can write down the stuff to add here. And then once you do it, you can always just copy paste it into your main stuff. And if you say, I'm going to discontinue this one, you can just take it, cut and paste it, and put it in the discontinued. I'll just do it again. So if I had like A, B, C, right? And I go like this, cut, and then I move it into the discontinued, paste, That way you can just keep track of yours and whoever you're working with. You can keep track of all their supplements and not rely on people's memories or their scribble scrabble on a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'd start with doing it for yourself. Okay. And I think that this could be a good, we actually have links on that page, but I think this could be a good,
So can this template be downloaded?
Yeah. Or? So here's what you can, there's several things you can do with it. You can download it. You can say file download as. And you can download it as a Excel, as a open office, PDF, whatever. The other way you can do it is you can just make a copy. So create your own Google Drive. So I can make a copy and name it, you know, Mihaela's, right? And put it on you wherever you want to keep it. What we do for the people in our ERC program, our year-long program, we have a Google folder for every one of those people. And we put a copy of this in each of their folders, and they, with their coach, will work together to fill it. And then if they want to download it and take it to the doctor with them because they're going to see a new specialist, they have all their information right here, and all they have to do is download it. Okay? Let me take that out. I'm going to have to fix this. I don't know how this happened. Usually we say share, and it should say, anybody with the link can edit. Only specific people can edit. Oops, there's still some people on there that shouldn't be there. Anyway, darn it. All right, I'm going to clear this out. If you know who she is, Lynn, maybe you can download it and send it to her, email it to her. And I don't know how she would have gotten in here, though, because she isn't in NEPT. So we don't give this to people unless they're in NEPT or in ERC. Well, this link, yeah. All right. Well, we discovered something. Okay. If we go back to that other page where we came from for this. Whoops. How do I go back? There we go. If you go back here, there's a bunch of videos on it and talk about all the different parts of this master tracker. Okay. So you can see how we use it and how we recommend using it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody else have questions? Let me stop share.
She upgraded to foundations.
Oh, she's in foundations? Oh, okay. So we need to have changed. So she didn't know better. She just put her stuff in it. She got the link. She put her stuff in it. Maybe what we should do is add a little front to it. Like make that link. I don't know. Somehow we'll make a note that says, make sure you make a copy of this. Do not use as is, or somehow.
Oof. You have that on there. It's just not bold enough.
Okay. All right. We'll figure that out. We'll make it bolder. And I'll have to clear it out. And it's now set to only select people can edit. I don't know how that happened. Oh, well. Oh, well. Yeah, but you guys have, there's a lot of resources here. I mean, I've been doing this for 25 years, and the biggest thing I find that's difficult is just keeping track of all the information. For your own self, it's hard enough, right? To keep track of what did I take last week? What did I do? And for all your people. So one of the modules that we're still working on, like enhancing and releasing, is one where it's all about these clinical skills, like, you know, the whole experience, creating the experience and the paperwork and all that kind of stuff. Cause it's, you know, it can be challenging. And I love to hear from people who've been doing stuff like this for a while to see what you've come up with. Cause I'm always enhancing it. And this is, you know, that master tracker is a 25 year project basically. It's still a work of in progress. I'll say, Lynn, guess what I just added to the master tracker? In fact, there was something we just added to it. Hopefully it's there as of June 7th. Had we added that yet? This may not even be the most, where is the one? Health timeline. Findings and recommendations. This was our latest. Let me share my screen again. This one we were excited about when we created this one. Say, Lynn, I just edited this page. I just made a new sheet in here. Yeah. So this one is just, and you can do what you want with it, right? You can take something like this and make your own, right? Say, oh, I don't like what she did here. I want to do this differently. But I basically took what's their 90. We talk about 90-day goals. So we work with people in 90-day goals. So if they have a 90-day goal of dropping 30 pounds. So where do they want to be at the end of month one, month two, month three, right? Key findings. Like, what did you find that you really want to keep note of? You know, you had an appendix surgery at age 12. That's something to keep note on that might have related to thing. You know, Brandon had antibiotics like 10 times. You had antibiotics a gazillion times. So whatever key interview findings you think are critical to keep here, so you don't have to go looking all over. Because you know what? As you work with more and more people, you're going to get them confused. I mean, I do it all the time. I'll go, oh, and they'll go, no, though, that wasn't you. That was somebody else. Cause I just talk to them at the same time. So to have a couple of sheets in here that have that summary that you don't have to go flipping through. Like I have all these charts. I moved them off my desk. They were just taking up so much space, but you know, thick charts like this, that's hard to go through. It's easier to have summaries. And that's why I created this. And then I, made this like for people, for giving people, what to do, like what are their health? What health supporting actions can they add? What health depleting access should they be releasing in notes? So it's just something that I put together to help me tabularize stuff for folks. So anyway, I just thought I'd share it. Lots in there. All right. Questions, comments? Was there anything in here? Let's see. Yeah, metal detox, Lynn was saying for Brandon, and that definitely would be another step to look at. You know, I don't know if you have any favorites, Lynn, but I really like gentle detox for metals if somebody's not in a state, you know, of a really serious state. I like doing stuff like Pectisolve, the citrus pectins. It's a very gentle way to remove it. Cilantro and chlorella and things like that. I think, let's see what else we might see in here. Oops. Oh, somebody's asking about the book I held up, The Advanced Nutrition and Human Metabolism. It's right at the beginning of somewhere in the program where we talk about that being a textbook. It's in one of the...
Under the advanced resources.
Okay. All right, what else? All right, so everybody's saying it was great to learn from Brandon. Oh, CBD oil. Yeah, tried it. I used it daily during the healing phase and found it incredibly helpful for inflammation. Yes, more and more. And somebody gave me the name of a doc that we're going to look into getting to come in for to do a talk on CBD in the advanced clinical resources because it's up and coming and getting easier to find. Had to drive to Colorado from Ohio to get activated. Okay. I think CBD on his own had the same. So to get the THCA. Yeah. All right. Annette says Nestle's looking at buying Merck as well. Oof. You know, these guys are trying to become monopolies. All right. Anything else? Oh, Chia, not China. All right. Does she hydrate enough? Hydration, you know, it's really one of those important first steps that we're going to do. And we're going to be doing, starting in January, we're going to be doing, I'm thinking monthly, they may be more close together, but each of those seven pillars that we talk about, the food, the stress, the attitude, et cetera, we're going to be doing a live talk and then guide you through all the materials we have because those can be amazing patient resources for you. So we'll be doing that. And of course, some of those things I didn't ask because I don't always ask on these calls, but hydration, super important.
Yeah, I actually drink a lot of water. I drink more than my body weight per day. But like every time I get like muscle tested, they always tell me that I'm dehydrated.
Yeah. So your body's not absorbing the water, and it could be the kind of water. It could be that you need to do some, you know, something to make the water more wet, so to speak. Or there's the, what's the guy that I talked to on his, I can't remember his name. I'm bad at remembering people's names, but we interviewed him on my radio show, and he's a big Pollock about water. There's the little energy, crystal energy drops that you can put in. I have a little, it's over on the other side of the room, but I have a little stir that you can do, that has some crystals in it, and it helps to put the spiral back in, you know, cause you think about water as it flows through nature, you know, the stream and the vortexing, and then we take it and we have to clean it cause it gets so messed up, and we have to run it through all these filtration plants. So it goes through all the filtration plants and it gets chlorinated and fluoridated. And then we don't like the chlorine and the fluorine. So we take it again and we run it through reverse osmosis or distillation or something. By the time we get it, it's just not the same, right? So there are some things to help put that back in, put the spin back in, and help the water molecules align so that your body can absorb it better.
Okay.
So I would look at that, especially if over and over again your muscle testing to stay dehydrated even though you're drinking plenty.
Right.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Rose, berberines, plantain, bell, that's Lynn, was that for, cause I'm going backwards. Was that for, the Klebsiella? Was that for Candida?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then, Cryptolepsis. Yep. I've used those. There's a really couple of great books that everybody can have on your shelves as, references. I don't know, Herbal Antibiotics. And then there's another one that's Herbal Antivirals by the same author, Stephen Booner, B-U-N-E-R. And it just has a lot, he's done a lot of research on the different different bacteria and different viruses and all, and putting together herbal protocols and nutritional protocols. Not to say that we're going to go and adopt a this for that approach. But what this is yes, you want to fix the root cause. Like, why is the terrain allowing for these things to grow out of control? But once these guys have taken hold, you want to get rid of them in the safest way possible. You don't want to be on antibiotics every 2 months like you were growing up, or like Brandon was growing up, and most of us probably were. I think by the time I was 5, I had my tonsils out at 5 and or 4 or 5. And up till then, I had been on a lot of antibiotics because I kept getting infections, and they didn't think about it had to do with the Kool-Aid and the Cheetos and all that kind of stuff. So
I have one more question. Yeah. So I actually grew up in a heavy metal industry town, lots of pollution, and I also had a million dental issues, and so I had mercury fillings. They were removed about 16 years ago, but not safely.
Darn.
Yeah. So, and kind of with about that time, I think I started having more symptoms. So should I make that a priority, or should I still go to the gut and then deal with the metals?
You're going to have to get in order to get the gut healed, you're going to have to do the metals. In order to get the metals out, you're going to have a good, healthy gut. So I would do that. And I would look at something like modified citrus pectin, which is a very good detoxifier.
Okay.
And it'll help to support you in cleansing that through. So let's just see what's in the gut right now, because you've got to address that if it's way out of balance.
Okay. Yeah.
And then you certainly look at the heavy metals, but it's really about supporting the system to be able to handle it. Like, again, we don't want to blame a specific thing. It's like your body, you overwhelmed your body's detoxification pathways.
Right.
Right. And, you can certainly get a 23andMe test for just to see what weaknesses and what areas you're mostly going to have to work on. And they're running a special this month again for, I think it's like $79. You can get the Ancestry run, and that has all the raw data, just like the other one.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good ones. Yeah. And I like those. Let me see. There's just a couple more and then we can go see. This went a long time again. Homeopathics, definitely. I would love to hear, if you want to unmute yourself, what kind of homeopathic stuff you would use for the heavy metal detox, for the gut.
Well, we do isopathics. So we use the metal for metal, basically, on clear. We have a metal combination that we use for pretty much every month for everybody. Because everybody, you know, if you breathe, you get metals. So,
So when you say every month, you mean they're on it consistently or just do like a dose a month?
The way that we work with clients is on a monthly basis. We do a sequential treatment. So we're clearing a lot more than just metals, but that's just a given.
Well, we're going to have you come on and do like a talk for us and tell us about what you do. Just tell us what your practice is like and what you, how you go about analyzing and what some of the tools are that you use. I'd be fascinated to hear.
I'd love to.
Okay. Let's talk about it. Are you coming next weekend for the potluck here?
I'm planning on it.
All right. Good. We'll have a conversation. If not, then we'll set something up after that. But I'd love to have you do that. We can plan something out because I think everybody, you know, that's an area that we all could learn
from. Most people don't know anything about homeopathy.
All right. I tried one time. I bought a homeopathic class and I was going to do it. And it was on cassette tapes. That'll tell you how old it is. And because it was so scratchy, I was putting him in the thing and going out running. And it was so scratchy and so low. The quality was so bad that I couldn't even get through them. So I still have them somewhere. All right. Lynn, you had 8 removed in one fell swoop. And what did you do? Did you support that homeopathically? Because that's a lot to get done, and that sometimes can overtax the system.
Well, I had that done before I even knew what homeopathy was. I worked for a dentist, and I just said, you're going to do it. And he didn't want to. And, of course, it wasn't done biologically or anything. But
We
used rubber dam and all that, but we didn't have all the vitamin C and all the other things that some of the
a lot of them are doing IVC and a lot of different things. Okay.
But I've done a lot of detox on it since. So
okay, good. Good. Yeah. Cause that's scary. Cause you can take somebody who's functioning, but you know, functioning, right? Not ideal. And then put them through like removal of mercury and have them come out really debilitated because you mobilize all those metals into the bloodstream. And if the detox pathways aren't really working well, then it affects the brain. And I've heard of people getting paralysis from it. I've heard of people getting different kind of nerve damage.
I didn't really have any problem with that part, but a well-meaning chiropractor told me to take high doses of selenium to detox, and I had a horrible reaction to the selenium.
Interesting.
Had nightmares and pain and all sorts of weird stuff.
Wow.
So, doing something.
Wow. Whew. And yeah, see, you like Booner's books as well?
I don't use them a lot for reference, but I love the way he writes. It's like reading poetry. So but, he has a lot of good stuff in there as an herbalist.
That's great. All right. Cool. Super. So if any of you guys didn't hear my interview yesterday with Dr. Masley, he's very much in alignment with what we teach and what we do and his whole brain stuff. And, you know, sometimes I just keep bringing people on that are saying the same things related to different parts of the body, and people hear it and then they hear it and then they hear it and they finally get it. You know, sometimes like with your family, that you may tell them this stuff and tell them this stuff, and suddenly, you know, the kid down the street tells them something and suddenly like they want to do it. Did you ever hear about doing this? Well, yeah, I think I've been telling you that for the last 5 years. So it's just, if with our patients, our clients, it's the same thing. It's like the more you can expose them to the impact of the things that they're doing and the things they could be doing on their health in different ways, the better reaction you're going to get to it. So, all right, everybody. I will see you soon.
Okay.
Bye, everybody. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. And by the way, we have a huge week next week with lots of calls because all of the December stuff got smooshed into 1 week. So when you get your newsletter on Sunday, you're going to go, I don't know if I want to hang out with her that much. But anyway, they'll all be recorded and you know, you can always hang out and do it over Christmas one because I'm taking a break for the 2 weeks. So. Bye.
Oh, bye.